It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany, UK, Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy, happy new year. Same old decade, though. Yes, indeed, that's right. It is live progressive broadcasting on New Year's Eve 2019. We bid farewell to this arbitrarily designated year, this particular trip around the sun. And I wonder how many of us actually think about what that trip around the sun means. Because it's not like the sun just sits there. It's moving, too. We're all moving. If I understand the physicists correctly, it's not, we're sort of moving in a helical spiral through the universe as we revolve around the sun and the moon revolves around us. Everything's moving. Change is constant. And yes, this being New Year's Eve, as I mentioned last night, it's always good to remind us why this is New Year's Eve. You know, this is the New Year's Eve that was conceived by white people. It's not Chinese New Year. It's not it's not anybody else's New Year, but it is a white Eurocentric New Year, as conceived by the church hundreds of years ago, as a way of marking that very special day when little baby Jesus was taken and had his little baby Jesus genitals mutilated. Happy New Year. I hope it will be a Happy New Year. It's shaping up. It's beautiful outside today here where I am in the last meandering foothills of the Appalachians. Oh, yeah. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, and we may very well be the only live progressive broadcasting taking place right now. At least radio-wise. And if that's the case, then I'm tickled pink that you've decided to share a portion of your whatever your year-end celebration is with me and with the community, the Horn Family Community Congregation at large. However it is, whatever superstitions you follow to guarantee yourself good luck in the coming year. I hope you're all set for it. I'm going to do a little, since I'm away from Agnes and Ferg, I'm going to do a little cooking for some friends for tomorrow. After the program ends tomorrow, I'll take it with me and go and I figured I'd serve up corned beef and cabbage. The cabbage is to represent money. And some Hoppin' John with black eyed peas. Got to have black eyed peas. I need all the good luck I can get. Season it with some hog jowl. I'll be frying some hog jowl in the morning. And you do that because when you think about where the jowl comes from on the hog, it's not like belly, where you're eating low on the hog. When you eat hog jowl, you begin your year eating high on the hog. So hopefully we'll have it, the cabbage for the money and I don't know what the black-eyed peas represent, but I do love black-eyed peas and Hoppin' John. tomatoes and chilies and onions and black-eyed peas and long grain rice. Yum. Just yum. And so hopefully we'll get the new year off to a good start and bid farewell to this year, which started out okay-ish. I guess they all do. And then somewhere around the, a little past the midpoint of the year, it began sliding rapidly downhill. So 2019 is not going to, goodbye now, don't let the door hit you where the good Lord split you. Right. Lee in New York with a note. Yes, Bob, we are always moving. But Republicans want that motion to be retrograde. Well, that's so very true indeed. Got a note from our buddy Gary up in New York. Sent a photo along. Gary is at Times Square. And what a mob scene that is. I'm not even claustrophobic, and I could not do New Year's Eve in Times Square. No, sorry, not happening. Yuck. Too much teeming humanity for me. Just Happy New Year. Right, no. But here it is. And, you know, our arbitrarily named and numbered year. And we will have, I hope we will have a New Year's Eve on the front porch. I thought that would be particularly enjoyable. So, you know, we'll just check in and see what Sparky thinks about that. If we do, here in about an hour or so, we'll get that conversation going. And hopefully there will be a Skype link up at headon.live. Just click it and it'll carry you right into the extraordinary, ordinary roundtable conversation that takes place in the old holler tree that we sublet from the Keebler Elves, usually on Fridays, but sometimes for special occasions like New Year's Eve, Christmas Eve. We get together for an extra group discussion among the family community congregation. Sparky tells me that he is working on it now, and in the meantime, if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that is the Horn chat room, head on by headon.live. See what I did there? Head on by headon.live. That could get confusing in a hurry, couldn't it? Head on by headon.live and click on chat room, and if you don't already have a screen name and a password, well, pick one out, jump right in, and you'll immediately be greeted by the likes of Anatole and House of Roberts and Jimmy in the Great Northwest and Squeaky, all waiting for you. Okay? And let's see, every program here begins with gratitude. So we have, of course, thanks that we send out. Yeah, see, let's see. One, two, three. Oh, I got another screen to get up here to monitor so that I can be sufficiently absorbed in all manner of technology. Thank you very kindly to David. Thank you, David, for jumping in on the fundraising. And I didn't see it come in last night. Thank you very kindly to our dear friend Yuki for jumping in and helping us to close out 2019 and December, the year and the month and the week on schedule for fundraising in terms of keeping this program on the air another day, another week, another month, hopefully another year, and giving us a good start heading into January. Yeah, let's see here. Yeah. And there's the extra screen. And Lee pointing out as far as New Year's Eve in Times Square, Lee says, New Year's at Times Square, only in a hotel room overlooking the square. This New Yorker never spent hours in the cold without a bathroom. That seems wise. Oh, and Jim wants me to give the white thing a rest. No, I don't think so, Jim. I don't think so at all. That would be to ignore the realities of history. And I don't know what you mean by hope your kitchen cleanup regime has improved. No idea at all. Happy New Year. Same to you, Jim. Jim's been to Times Square. And no, we can't stop talking about the impacts of racism in our world because it's still with us. In fact, I got a story right here to get us going. So, this happened up in Michigan. And it was at a car dealership. And a gentleman named Terrence Smith works as a car salesman in Kent County, Michigan. And so a woman named Shelley Huckle, H-U-E-C-K-E-L, Herkel, Huckle, Hukel, racist, was on the lot, and she was, she wanted, I guess, a better deal on an automobile than Mr. Smith was willing to offer. And so she repeatedly made reference to his black ass and repeatedly used that word as a weapon against him. She put him in immediate fear of receiving an unconsented to touching of an insulting or provoking nature. That's called assault. And then she began to strike him. Now, this is something that happened earlier this year. Didn't just happen day before yesterday. What happened recently, however, was that the case came to trial because Shelley Huckel was in fact charged with assault and battery. And she was also charged with a race-based crime. And see, there's one of these stories every day in the United States. 2020 would be freaking awesome if there wasn't one of these every damn day. So Shelley Huckel was charged with these crimes and, you know, all over a trade-in offer on a car deal. She was charged with the crimes, and instead of having a jury trial, she had a bench trial in front of Kent County, Michigan Circuit Judge Paul Sullivan. That means there was no jury. He heard the evidence. He applied. He made the findings of fact. He reached the conclusions of law and rendered the verdict. Now, I guess the good side of this, is that Judge Sullivan did convict Shelley Huckel of assault and battery. He told her that she should be ashamed of her stupid acts. But here's the here's the interesting part. Even though the evidence was uncontroverted that, among other things, Shelley Huckel, the white lady, white woman, that was no lady, even though it was uncontroverted and proven beyond a reasonable doubt that she said to take your scamming black ass back inside and go find the title, and that she then slapped him with the back of her hand and used that hateful word repeatedly, multiple times. Well, the judge said that that her crime was not motivated or impacted. Wait for it. Get the hockey puck, maybe, because this may be the stupidest judicial ruling of the year. With the evidence as aforementioned, the judge found that her tirade was not race. It was not motivated by racism. No, really. Kind of makes you wonder what it would take. Terrence Smith, the car salesman in question, was stunned and upset. And pretty much sickened. And the circuit judge found that, she was just upset. She was just upset about the trade-in offer. That's all. Then why did she use those words? Those specific words. Well, that's some privilege, that white privilege. What are you going to do? So that's up north. That's Michigan. Do you remember... what's that, Lee? Lee says, striking the salesperson. When the salesperson is African-American, insulting and hitting the salesperson to get a better price, is that from the art of the deal? It very well may be, Lee. Very well may be. But what I was going to say, a couple of years ago, I think, it's in the last couple of years, there was a story, and I think we all read it. I think it came from The Guardian. And it talked about how many, or perhaps even most, of the great calamities of humanity through history have started from little tiny nothings, like shooting an archduke. And the next thing you know, a few million people are dead in Europe. A bad Supreme Court decision over a hostler trying to get his freedom. The next thing you know, there's 400,000 dead Americans and 300,000 dead traitors. Little things. And one of those little things is when, where sectional tensions are concerned in this country, is the divide between North and South. And of late, there's an idiot. A white-wing congresswoman, a maggot from New York named Elise Stefanik. You may recall the conniption and the hissy that she threw back during the impeachment proceedings when she didn't want to be bothered by having to follow the rules of the debate that were established years ago by her own Republican Party. And so Devin Nunes tried to hand the proceedings off to her in violation of the rules. And well, apparently she's either got a new social media consultant director person, or she's just decided to display her stupid for the whole wide world to see. and along the way spread a debunked, baseless, whack job conspiracy theory that's been promulgated by the maggots, in particular the National Republican Congressional Campaign Committee. So she tweeted, all these people that she says are going to win, these Republicans who are going to win races against Democratic incumbents in 2020. One person polling and fundraising very strong against Harley Rauda in California. Another maggot who she predicts will win in South Carolina in a pro-Trump district. And then Karen Handel will beat Lucy McBath in Georgia, since Lucy lives in a different state. That Lucy lives in a different state part is the conspiracy theory that the Republicans have been pushing all along. And far be it from the Republican Party to let being wrong ruin a good conspiracy theory. The Republicans have convinced themselves that Lucy McBath, who went to Congress on the blue wave, having had her son taken from her by another miserable, round of Second Amendment freedom breaking out. Second Amendment freedom broke out, and Lucy McBath's son was killed as a result. And the Republicans are still stinging over this because she won in Georgia. A Democrat won in Georgia. And they don't like having their solid white supremacist South being challenged. And so the Republicans are all hollering that Lucy McBath lives in Tennessee. Mm-hmm. And to prove this, they sent packages to the address in Tennessee. And Lucy McBath's mother-in-law signed for the packages that arrived at the house in Tennessee. Ooh, the truth is out there, isn't it? And even though it was obvious that Lucy McBath's mother-in-law signed for the packages, that didn't slow the Republicans down either. And so they continue to claim that Lucy McBath lives there, including Elise Stefanik. And yeah, just because she's an idiot. And what's more, it turns out that if there's anybody who doesn't live in her district, it's Elise Stefanik, who lives in her parents' vacation home. And so I said, you know, little things. And along the way, and I got to admit, I giggled when I saw this. Along the way, Elise Stefanik was referred to, those little things, little tiny. She was referred to as, and you can tell a Southerner's pissed off when we start hauling the Y word out. You know, Southerners can be Democrats, too, like Lucy McBath. Elise Stefanik now wears the moniker Yankee Dimwit. Henceforward, all first references from the Journalism Style Book for Elise Stefanik will be Yankee Dimwit Elise Stefanik, who really is a dimwit. Like I said, she's been off on a tear with her social media lately. She jumped on Twitter the other day to pitch some books that she thinks people should read. And then she asked the people on Twitter, never do this, you Yankee dimwit, never do this. She asked people on Twitter to tell her what she should read. I don't think science can calculate the speed with which people began responding to her that she might start with the Constitution. Yeah, don't. Elise, you Yankee dimwit. And it sounds, you got to admit, it sounds better with the accent, though. You Yankee dimwit. Yes. Yankee dimwit. Elise Stefanik. Beautiful. Oh, and Brother Deacon Asa informs me that the Skype link is up at headon.live now. Thank you, Sparky, for generating it and shipping it over to Brother Deacon Asa. And thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, for putting it up there. If you refresh your browser, you'll see the link now. And if you want to take... if you want to take the opportunity to join in the conversation, well, jump in now, and we will get to it here not too much longer from now. Let's see. Oh, what else besides the Yankee dimwit? Who has to be told to read the Constitution. Let me see. This ran through the other day and haven't gotten to it yet. Yeah, I hope I can still find it. It's a real Lulu. And, of course, it has to do with... it has to do with Tracy's... neighbor. That's how I think of him now, Tracy's neighbor. I'm talking, of course, about John Voight. Yeah, there's John. We've got a... I don't know. Should we take up a collection and just send Tracy a great big butterfly net for the next time she sees John Voight out there in the neighborhood? Because his maggotry, I mean, he's, wait a minute here, I got cord problems. There we go. His maggotry is off the charts. Yeah, witness the following. Here, I don't want to miss any of it. While we're at it, get the hockey puck and the duct tape. Because John Voight, well... And I think his own daughter refuses to speak to him anymore since he decided to go full maggot. Oh, wait, before we go to John Voight, note coming in from Ron and Raleigh. This is how you do it. Subject line. With regard to Shelley Hukel there and Mr. Smith in Michigan. This is how you do it. That was just a unique negotiating technique. Don't you recognize that there's no such thing as a race-based assault? Well, of course not. Apparently the judge doesn't. Does. Yeah. And Randy and PA pointing out, it seems that it's not usually the initial event that triggers mass tragedy. It's the periodic buildup of the want to fight. These stupid people don't really care what they're fighting for. They just want to fight and need an excuse to do so. The murder of the Archduke only triggered the want to fight in England because there hadn't been a nice bloody war for some time. And all those kissing cousins on the royal households of Europe just had an urge to go out and get a few of their people slaughtered for things that they didn't really fully understand in the first place. Well, that's what happens when you let a bunch of inbreds run your continent. But that Yankee dimwit, you know, when the Southerners start hauling out the Y word, trouble is not far behind. Oh, Jim is feeling particularly cranky this evening. Have a happy new year. Lighten up, Jim. Back to John Voight.
There is a God.
Huh?
There is a truth. This left wing lacks truth and are afraid of Trump's truth to save this country.
Do you even know what that meant? Trump's truth. Now, I guess there's objective truth and then there's Trump's truth. You know, Trump's truth like, no collusion. Trump's truth like, no obstruction of justice. Trump's truth like, the phone call was perfect. Yeah, I guess that's Trump truth.
Let us all stand with God, with President Trump, and ask the holy light of...
Did he just equate God and Donald J. Trump? The J stands for Jesus? Because I think he did. Let us all stand with God with Donald Trump. That's linguistically the same thing as saying Trump is God and God is Trump.
Let us all stand with God, with President Trump, and ask the holy light of God and Jesus for their prayers, more now than ever, for the evil...
Wait. I studied theology with some vigor years back when I was writing my dinosaur to college. And last I checked, most of your major religions... You pray to the deity. But according to John Voight, whose medication is apparently not working, if you see him on the street, Tracy, look out. Go the other way. You ask God to pray for you, and you ask the Holy Light. The Holy Light, what is that? Is he a Zoroastrian now? The Holy Light? Ahura Mazda? Yeah. I bet you, there's not a hell of a lot of live radio out there today anyway. I'll bet you this is probably the only live radio program, or maybe even pre-recorded, that referenced Ahura Mazda today.
The light of God and Jesus for their prayers, more now than ever, for the evil is trying to win. This is a battle for truths. And the left are afraid of the true truths that President Trump...
The true truths, as opposed to the false truths. Or the truths he doesn't like. Or... Oh, Angelina, you're well off. Can't you just buy a box of Thorazine darts and a blowgun and just... once in a while and keep your daddy calm?
...has brought forth... This is America. We are strong. We are smart. And our leader, President Trump, has shown us this. If the impeachment proceeds, America...
Shown us what? That he's willing to pay off porn stars? That he likes to be spanked with a rolled-up copy of Forbes? That he likes to pay hookers to... Go pee-pee on the bed where Barack Obama and Michelle slept? I mean, there's some truths in Trump truths.
America will fall, for President Trump has built it back, and the extreme left are destroying this nation's glory. I stand on this ground, this soil of the United States of America, and I remember the words of Abraham Lincoln. This is not what God would want. They're not concerned for good or bad. This is evil intent to destroy a president who has America in his hands.
You know, I don't think Abraham Lincoln ever said any of that. Now, Abraham Lincoln said a lot of things. Somebody asked him during the Civil War whether God was on the side of the Union. And he responded, I think, "Madam, I'm not nearly so concerned as to whether God is on our side as whether we are on God's." Of course, Lincoln was not much in the way of a religious man, but he did have a talent for using the language of religion to reach people. Lee in New York says, "Trump's not gotten around to truth, Trump truth. Trump hasn't gotten around to truth. He has to empty out all the lies first, over 15,000 so far. We may have a long time to wait for Trump to have only truth left inside of him." Well, I think by the time the lies are all emptied out, Trump would be so hollowed out he could blow away in a gentle spring breeze.
And the left are destroying. What do? We pray and hope that in God we trust. Much love.
Much crazy. He's not okay. Not by a long shot. So, Tracy, like I said, if you see him out in the neighborhood, go the other way. That or, you know, call your local mental health commissioner and maybe have him checked out. And then, that's another thing I wanted to bring up. You know, we've had rather extensive conversations here about Trump's time in office and his manifest ill health, the obvious poor state of his mental well-being. And that conversation has taken place in terms of impeachment, talking about how the Constitution handles impeachment, as well as in terms of what could be done via the 25th Amendment if we had a fully functioning cabinet, or if the Congress had ever gotten around to doing that thing that the 25th Amendment allows them to do in terms of creating a body providing a body by law to assess the mental and physical well-being of a president. But Congress didn't do that job. Still needs to be done. And so the question arises, and I have said all along that if we're going to start having septuagenarian and octogenarian presidents as a matter of course, that we'd probably better have some sort of mechanism in place for when they start going to pieces. What's that, Brother Deacon Asa? Don't hide your light under a bushel, brother. Fuck John Voight. Fuck him. Fuck him with a hot poker. He's in my Deadpool for 2020. Don Nappy-Headed Hose Imus was in my Deadpool for 2019, and look what happened. Yeah, bye, Don. Yeah, how's the weather down there? I scarcely even mentioned the passing of Don Imus. Wasn't much worth mentioning in the first place. But so we talked about in the fact that he is. Although the United States Department of Justice has said that he is above the law for criminal purposes, he is not necessarily above the law for civil purposes. We know that a president can be sued. We know that a president can be deposed. In point of fact, we have George Conway in part to thank for that, because he's the one who argued the legalities behind compelling Bill Clinton to answer a lawsuit from One of those women back in the dim, dark, and misty past of the 1990s. So we know a president is amenable to legal process. You know, Brett Kavanaugh was a big one with the whole make Bill Clinton answer the law stuff. Brett, who likes beer and likes having his mortgage and credit card debts paid off by shadowy unknown people, he likes that too. Brett has since changed his thinking now that there's a Republican in the White House. But what I found interesting, and I saved this the other day when I saw it, every couple of days there's a new article out by some mental health professional pleading with the nation to understand just how gravely mentally ill the President of the United States is. And this time it's Professor Bandy Lee again, who, among other things, called for the House Judiciary Committee to establish a mental health panel of professionals to assess the mental status of Nitwit Nero. Interviewed over at Salon, Bandy Lee even went so far as to suggest, and this is the cool part, because if you listen to this program, you are so far out ahead of the curve that it's like being on Straight Road, because we talked about this months ago and, in fact, delved deeply into it. A mental hygiene, a mental status exam for Donald Trump. Bandy Lee told Salon, as a coworker, speaking of Nancy Pelosi, as a coworker, she has the right to have him submit to an involuntary evaluation, but she has not. Anyone can call 911 to report someone who seems dangerous, and family members are the most typical ones to do so, but so can coworkers and even passers-by on the street. The advantage of a coworker starting this process is that a court can mandate a mental capacity evaluation before the dangerous person returns to work. Continuing, Dr. Bandy Lee said, first, he is highly unwell, which I'm glad many finally seem to see now. More specifically, you can tell how unwell he is by the degree he cannot deviate from his defenses, mainly denial and projection. I'm beginning to believe that a mental health hold, which we've tried to avoid, will become inevitable. I know people like to predict things for the coming year. It sounds like Bandy Lee has predicted that a team of mental health professionals will eventually have to evaluate Donald J. Trump. The J stands for genius. Now, that story's less than a week or so old. But we had it months ago. Months ago. It's not that there's any magic involved. It's just a matter of connecting dots. And one gets the sense that we're getting perilously close to the time when he cannot be allowed anywhere near the levers of power or the buttons associated with them. He threatened Iran today. Of course, he threatens a lot, and we all know that he's a coward. But it's getting creepy enough that we may have to, that action may have to be taken before he can hurt the country any more than he already has. And among other things, the business in Baghdad is disturbing. I'm so old, I can remember when a consulate got attacked in North Africa, and the Republicans spent years shrieking about Benghazi. So far, they seem pretty damn quiet about Baghdad. Of course, it all stems from the fact that we missiled some Iraqi militia, and that it seems to have annoyed the Iraqis, who still have this notion that it's their country and not ours. As Shorty in L.A. points out, there have been no claims of responsibility and no U.S. troops have been harmed. Rocket attacks target Iraqi base housing U.S. troops. No casualties reported. That was the 6th of December, 2019. And now we have something hot and nasty on our hands in Iraq. And what do we get from the alleged president of the United States in regard to it? A whole bunch of twooping. All day long today, he's been running off at the thumbs on Twitter, even as the embassy in Baghdad was being stormed by crowds of irate Iraqis.
The Democrats will do anything to avoid a trial in the Senate in order to protect sleepy Joe Biden and expose the millions and millions of dollars that Where's Hunter and possibly Joe were paid by companies and countries for doing nothing. Joe wants no part of this mess.
See, he's so mentally compromised, he doesn't even understand, or he can't make the connection that somehow or another his daughter and his kids are engaged in far more graft and corruption than their pinky nails than anything Joe or Hunter Biden have ever done or even contemplated doing. And of course, Joe Biden made Grandpa Joe made a remark the other day. About the Senate trial, and then, of course, being a Democrat, he had to walk it back and apologize and, you know, for speaking forcefully. Yeah. So Iraqi Shiite militia supporters got into the embassy compound. The embassy compound was then evacuated, Americans hiding in safe rooms in the lot. How embarrassing. Of course, it's worth remembering that Republicans in the House cut the budget for embassy protection. Yeah, that's how Benghazi happened in the first place. And so he's melting right before our very eyes. And once again, it feels like we may be teetering on the brink of war. And we don't even know who our allies would be. because we're rapidly running out of them. Stop it, Bob, says Lee in New York. Don't you know if anyone forced a mental health examination of the president, that mental health professional will be the target of every congressional Republican? The argument will be, who are you to remove the president of the United States from office? No doctor will be bold enough to take that necessary step. Probably not. But the process exists. And remember, a doctor does not have to initiate the process. Family can do it. Friends can do it. Co-workers, as Bandy Lee pointed out, can do it. And if the process were initiated, the process would have to be followed until someone forced it to be stopped. And, oh, by the way, if the president was taken in, I mean, this is somewhat theoretical, but it's okay. I mean, it's worth considering. It's worth considering because it may become a necessity at some point. But if the president was taken in for an involuntary mental status exam, that in itself would trigger the 25th Amendment. Not the part where the half of the cabinet agrees that he's all and then the vice president has to sign the letter. This would be a different section of the 25th Amendment. You know, the section that, like, when old Ronald Wilson Reagan, old 666 himself, was having some rotten part of his colon removed, you know, polyps Ronnie, then, or when H.W. was having proctoscope or whatever, and he's, you know, looped out of his mind on the Twilight drugs, then the presidency passed to the vice president until he was sober again. The presidency would pass to Mike Pencilneck Geek if Nitwit Nero was hauled in for a mental status exam. And then it turned out that the mental status exam was warranted and that he was as deeply mentally ill or is as deeply mentally ill as sane people know him to be. Yeah. Now, what's that note from Ron in Raleigh? I'm sorry, subject line. With apologies to Jim, white people like Mr. Voigt have a real problem. If you can listen to Donald Trump and come to the conclusion that he holds some deep and profound insights, they, like that orange fella, have severe mental disabilities. Listening to Angelina's papa makes me deeply concerned. P.S. Wait till he leaves office. The wailing and gnashing of teeth will be amazing. The hagiography when he dies is going to be that of greater than that for Ronald Wilson Reagan. Oh, he's going to be the greatest president Merca done never had. Yeah. And what's that, Brother Deacon Asa? Wait, says Brother Deacon Asa. Trump claims Joe and Hunter Biden got paid millions upon millions of dollars for doing nothing. In his little twoop, Trump's not suggesting any crimes were committed by the Bidens. It's not like they got paid millions and millions of dollars to illegally sell arms to a hostile country and use the proceeds to fund a genocide in South America now, is it? Well, no. No. Interesting you would put it that way, but no. Lee in New York. Sorry I was unclear. I know a doctor does not start the process. A doctor has to render the assessment. And, of course, I'm sure the Republicans would take issue with it. Maybe they could find that long-haired goober who signed the note that Trump dictated to him about how he's the healthiest man ever to breathe air. James in Illinois reminding us, and don't forget the shenanigans surrounding Edith Wilson. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's Woodrow Wilson's wife, of course, who hid her husband's disability so as to remain in the White House. She was de facto, by dint of circumstance, America's first woman president. Never mind the kids, says James. His golf trips have cost the equivalent of 296 years of presidential salary. Jesus Christ. But he donates his salary. Praise King Donald I. Yeah, many more bargains like that, and we'll be broke. So there's reason, you go into a new year with a sense of hope, but we also have to be kind of clear-eyed about this. And by the way, if you're going to be out and about this evening, please be careful. It is amateur night. And that means that people who probably shouldn't be driving sober will not be driving sober, but will in fact be driving drunk. You can stay in, please do so. Or if you go out, just remember, Uber and Lyft are out there for a reason. I need to reconnect to the Skype group. And then we'll get going with Friday on the front porch. FYI, says Todd in South Carolina, Stan, it would not be a doctor making the determination. It would be a panel. Panels diffuse the responsibility. In a mental status exam, it's usually done by one physician, or at least the ones that I'm familiar with and the ones that I worked on years and years ago. But ultimately, the decision is not made by a doctor. The decision is made by a legal professional, a judge or a commissioner or a magistrate of some sort. Yeah. Frank over in the Facebook chat. Are you in an interrogation room? Mr. Kincaid, coffee, sugar, cream. So how long have you been breaking into people's minds? it's kind of austere in here, but it's a little echoey and it's a little roomy, but the technology on this end takes a good bit of care of most of that, but that's good. Tea, please. Oolong. Two lumps. Two. Let's run over and check in with Sparky on this fine early New Year's Eve. Hey, Sparky, how are you?
I'm just fine. Hanging out here doing some chores. It's a nice, wonderful day. Don't have to run the heater.
Oh, very nice. Very nice.
Keep it great. Grady's loving it because the sun's shining on the back 40 out here. And he was gopher hunting a while ago. I don't like him digging out there, but he was digging somewhere.
some things, you can tell them no, but they're going to do it anyway. Yeah, and it looks like you're enjoying your air fryer.
Yeah, you want to hear the story of the air fryer?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, so I'm getting ready Sunday evening. I'm getting ready to. So I sit down and watch the 49ers play the Seahawks, right? And I burnt through my last stick of wood, so I had to go out and get some more wood. So I open up the door, and here's a big box outside the door. We got Sunday delivery for Amazon packages here from the Postal Service.
Wow.
So anyway, I bring it in, and I look at the side of the box, and it says air fryer. So I set it on the counter in the kitchen, and went and Judy and I said, why'd you buy an air fryer? And she goes, well, Marie has one. That's her niece. And just raves about it. So unboxed it. And I didn't deal with it all Sunday night. You know, just set it aside. Then I got up yesterday morning and I cooked some bacon in it. And that came out pretty good. And then so I decided to do some French fries in it. So I cut up potato and put the potatoes, dried potatoes, put them in a bowl, pour a little olive oil in there, mix them up, and put a little Pappy's garlic and herb seasoning on the potatoes, and then put it in the air fryer. Hit the French fry, preset for French fries, and let it go. Check about halfway through, shake them, pull it out, and shake it around. I tell you, this is the best French fries I've had in years.
That was the part I was waiting for. If they were, little sucker really works, huh?
Oh yeah, it took about 20 minutes on the French fry.
So they were nice and crispy on the outside and soft and mushy on the inside?
Yeah, exactly. Then I made up a little sauce of mayonnaise and ketchup with a little soy sauce in it, a dipping sauce. Now I ate half of them and Judy ate it, the other half.
Now you got me wanting good French fries. I think
we were going to cook some chicken in it, so we did some chicken thighs in it last night. And Judy floured them and everything, put them in there. And I tell you, that's the best fried chicken I've ever had.
I'll be darned. So did you season up the chicken or bread it or anything? Or?
Oh, she did all that stuff.
Okay.
She just got to use that, learn how to use it too.
How long did it take to do the chicken?
Oh, I think it was about 30 minutes maybe. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I got a feeling I'll be pulling the trigger on one sometime in the coming months.
They're not that expensive.
No, I mean, I was just afraid that they were going to be gimmicky and it would be another thing to take up space underneath the counter.
Yeah, and then you get an idea, so you go on YouTube. And anything you enter on YouTube, how to cook this in an air fryer, this in an air fryer, comes up with some gal or somebody showing you how to cook what you wanted in an air fryer.
I know Carol Baker got the really nifty looking one that it sits out kind of like a toaster oven, but then it folds up and away. You may have seen it advertised on TV, and she's having a blast with hers.
No, this is just looks like a big giant.
I can imagine that it would be nothing short of awesome for like wings.
Yeah, you just pull it. You got a handle on it. You just pull out the drawer when it's got a grilling pan in the top, and there's a button on it, and you can detach that grilling pan. Or it's all perforated and everything, so you just pull that out.
So it's going to be getting used.
Yeah, they're easy to clean, too.
And they're not quite as scary as an Instapot, are they?
I wouldn't know what an Instapot is.
It's that super highfalutin pressure cooker that, I'm scared of it. They'll explode.
Oh, yeah. We had an old-time pressure cooker that my mom used to use. That thing that scared the shit out of me. Had that little knob thing on the top that
rattled
around.
Yeah, the pressure relief valve, and it'd clackety, 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 clack, and whistle a little bit. And
yeah.
Yeah. And make you wonder if the house is about to go up. I've seen the aftermath. Oh. See, I've seen the aftermath of an exploded pressure cooker.
Well, I saw the aftermath once when I was a kid. I love these I forget what brand, but these tamale cups, and they were good. So I you just cut the lid on them, and then you put them in the water and boil it. And then I left one in there, boil all the water out, and the pressure built up on the pan. And you took the lid off the pan, flipped it over, and it went right into the ceiling and made a mark in the ceiling.
Well, this was mercifully and surprisingly, it wasn't me who did this. This was someone I knew, but they forgot about a pot of beans in a pressure cooker. And, you know, all the water boiled away, steamed away, pressure built, and then kaboom, and beans all over the kitchen. It wasn't pretty.
Well, this house was old house we rented down in Willow. It was built in 1915. Had one of those big island work areas because there's a ranch house at one time.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I'm up on the island wiping off the ceiling and everything. My dad comes in and catches me and my sister cleaning up the kitchen because that tamale was everywhere, all over the kitchen.
Oh, that had to be beautiful.
So he always called it the atomic tamale.
Your dad had a good sense of humor.
Oh, he never let me live that down. He used to bring that up in stories all the time just to make me feel bad, I think, or just to show how nutty I was when I was a kid.
At least the air fryers don't blow up. And no oil at all.
No.
That's amazing. That's amazing. I've got somebody...
Put the oil on the French fries, you know, but you put it, and then you mix them up, and then you put the seasoning on it so it sticks to the fry.
Wow, okay. Okay.
About a teaspoon.
I'm going to bounce over here to the stress line. Somebody's on hold and see who we've got over there. Hey, welcome to the program. Yeah, hello, you're on the air. Oh, wait, wrong damn button. There you are. Sorry about that.
Hi, yeah. Bob. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I got you.
Bob, Luke. This is Luke.
Oh, man, Luke, haven't talked to you in forever.
I know, bud. I'm sorry about that. Just the evil thing called life. You know how it is. It gets in your way.
Oh, I do. I do know indeed. How are you?
No, I was hearing you a minute ago. Oh, I'm fine, you know, upright and breathing. Other than that, everything after that's a bonus, you know.
That's the truth.
But, you were talking about the children of Satan a while ago. And, you know, isn't it interesting how they're going after Hunter Biden on everything? Because he made like 50,000 sitting on that board. But we don't talk about Douchebag Jr., his brother Fredo, his sister the blonde one, or her husband the
Beavis
blonde
and Butthead,
one.
Yeah.
Oh God! I mean, well, think of it. Just think. We'll just start with the bland one, or you know, as I call him, the walking mannequin. How many of us can get a $1 trillion loan on a building that no one else wants from a foreign government?
And that we're underwater on. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and you were talking a minute ago though about them not arresting him, Trump whenever he gets out of office. I think the day after the inauguration, when the new Democratic president is signed in, when he comes off of that stage, there's going to be state officials lined up holding handcuffs in their hands. And I think we should really have a pool about who gets him first. Because I know the New York State really wants
him. I think New York's interested.
Like I said, between wire fraud, bank fraud, there's a whole bunch of lists of those, but they're just waiting to take him away. And the other good part is, all these minions that he's got in the White House that are protecting him, guess what? They too can be arrested.
Well, at some point in time, you got to think judicial process is going to catch up with him, Luke.
Well, it's like I said, when we get something called an attorney general, it'll be interesting when the DOJ actually starts going after criminals again. So.
Yeah, we don't have much of one of those right now. But I think it was over at the Washington Post, Jennifer Rubin, who mm-hmm. wrote today that let's see, here's the pull quote. On Monday, a federal judge dismissed a case brought by Charles Kupperman, a former deputy national security advisor, asserting an absolute immunity to protect him from testifying. That leaves a ruling by Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson rejecting in scathing terms a similar claim of absolute immunity in a case involving former White House counsel Don McGahn as the final word for now on current and former executive branch employees' testimony. That means we're getting very close to them. They're going to have to make a choice, jail or Trump.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's one of those things. It's going to come to a point. I think that we've got two important legal things coming up, I think, in the next month or so. One is they're going to have a ruling on the McGahn case. And if they say there is no ultimate executive privilege, that everybody is going to start lawyering up real quick, I'd say. And the other thing that's coming up that nobody seems to ever want to talk about is in the next 30 days, Donald Trump gets to sit down with some lawyers for a nice lady called Summer Zervos.
Oh, yeah.
Because they get to depose Donald. And when you're in a deposition, you can ask anything.
Yeah. And because the way it works out is, you know, the judge will rule on it when he gets the deposition. For now, you answer the damn question.
Mm-hmm. And these will probably be videotaped, because we know Donald Trump and writing answers is not a good thing.
No. Well, Donald Trump, you see, he'll have to take the oath for that too. Remember, that was the entirety of the legal theory behind him not cooperating with the Mueller investigation, because the instant that he takes his hand off the Bible, he's gonna be committing some sort of perjury. McGahn knew that. They all knew that.
Well, it's like I say when you look at that deposition he did back in the '90s when he sued one of his biographers, and you watch that deposition, you're just like, why isn't this man in jail? I mean, dear Lord, it was like a flood of lies. I mean, everything he said is like, oh, the other thing that got to me is, and now we're starting to hear from these moderate Republicans, that apparently when Senator Murkowski made her little statement, you know, nowhere in there does she demand for any fact witnesses. She just says she's disappointed. Boo-hoo. You know, it's one of those things, it's like, you know, somebody really down the line ought to write a flip book, you know, the old fashioned flip books. You know, book.
Yeah, I'm not dropping any money at any betting parlors on. Republicans doing the right thing in the Senate.
Oh no! Like I say, I'm waiting to see somebody put a flip book. One side is going to be profiles and courage. The other side is going to be profiles and cowardice. Now let's put this way: I know a lot of moderate Republicans are going to be on the cowardice side.
Well, there aren't. There's no such thing. They're leopard.
You're sitting there with Mitt with the magic underwear, who has enough money he can take Trump on without even trying hard. You know what I mean? It's no fight for him. He's in a state where he almost can't lose. You know what I mean? Because like I say, he's more popular there than Trump is. So it's one of those things. So it's like, you know, if you're going to vote again, Mitt, you have to come out and answer one simple question. Whose oath did you take, the oath to the Constitution or the oath to Donald? Which one?
I think it's fairly clear, isn't it?
I know, but you know what I mean? Every time he talks, that every journalist should have to be the first thing they ask. You know what I mean? Something along those lines.
Yeah.
Why are you afraid?
Well, they had such a hissy the other day when the Democratic the lawyer for the Democratic House said, "Hey, we may not be done impeaching him." And they had a shit hemorrhage. But the fact of the matter is, if you want to talk about real precedent, then it would be worth it just to watch the Democrats call Jonathan Turley back before the Judiciary Committee and say, how do you feel about impeaching him for lying under oath?
Well, the thing that gets me is every time I hear him talking about these things, they go, well, it's the same as the Clinton rules. And you're sitting there going, wait a minute. With Clinton, there was something called a grand jury where all the witnesses have to testify.
Yeah.
Even though grand jury's testimony is supposed to be sealed, some fellow named Starr took all the things, put it on the Senate desk and said, here.
Yeah.
You know, we didn't have that. We haven't had that this time. I mean, essentially, they've impeached him just using half of the story. You have to. It's like, say, you have to wonder, how bad is it that he will not let these people speak? Because I mean, you know, we think we know how bad it is. I bet it's probably 10 times worse. If one of them ever got the gene and saw, all of a sudden decided got the blabbermouth gene and started talking.
But the thing is, once he's under oath in that deposition, he's going to lie. And the minute he tells a demonstrable falsehood, which will be, like I said, somewhere right after, is your name Donald J. Trump?
I ain't betting on that one either.
Back to the House Judiciary Committee we go. You prove the lie, you issue the articles of impeachment, and you go, okay, these are your rules, not ours. Lied about a blowjob, you know, Donald Trump lies about, you know, lying. Can we will you vote for that bill of impeachment?
Well, the thing that gets me though is you know, all during the House thing, you kept hearing these Republicans, as I call them, you know, crying out the rules. I said, wait a minute, these are the Benghazi rules. These are the ones you guys put in trying to nail Hillary. But they haven't been changed since then. These are the rules you guys liked.
Right.
Now all of a sudden they're bad rules. I mean, because they haven't changed it since then.
And you know, it was back.
It was back in
November when the judge in Manhattan refused to dismiss the Summer Zervos case.
Mm-hmm.
And remember, this isn't a consensual matter of oral sex. Summer Zervos.
What this was. Well, essentially, she got slandered by him.
Well, not just...
He called her a liar in public. He called her a liar.
But not just that. She said he sexually assaulted her on mm-hmm. The Apprentice. Mm-hmm. That's pretty profound.
Oh, there's another thing. The one story, I think, over this whole 3 or 4 years that has not been touched is why nobody has ever gone after Mark Burnett. Who sits on those tapes from the Apprentice? You know, he's blocked it. He's never let those be released.
Right, but realistically,
everybody that's been on the Apprentice says on those tapes, you know, in the bits and pieces they didn't air, said you don't want to hear the man because he was a racist. You know, well, everything he is. You know what I mean? Racist, misogynist, everything.
Yeah, and use that word every other word.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the thing. Here's the thing. If he gets, well, you know what I'm getting at. My
mm-hmm.
train of thought just kind of.
Okay.
But no, the point being
took a siding, yes.
Yeah, no. The point being though that if you showed a picture of Donald Trump wearing Klan robes and screaming that word at the top of his lungs, the maggots would still love it. That's the thing we really have a hard time coming to terms with, Luke. They're those kind of people.
Well, it's like say I've talked to people about this before. This is if you think you've ever seen you know, you think the Scientologists are bad, they ain't got nothing on this group. This is a cult. I mean, it's purebred. I mean, if he started asking people to cut their throats, I'd be scared what they'd do.
They will do what they're told. And see, there are people out there who are trying to get it started. One of the things that I've got in the stack for this evening is the recent statement by Franklin Graham.
Oh, God.
I mean, it's laughable. We as intelligent human beings,
and we weep at the same time.
He's trying to get people to start shooting, as if we're not, as if we don't have enough shooting going on as it is. So this past Friday, he wrote the following. Now the first time I read this, it gave me chills. Little hairs stood up on the back of my neck. What is the most serious threat facing America as we come to a new year? Cyber attacks from China, North Korea's nuclear capabilities, a new Cold War with Russia, the ongoing fight against Islamic terrorists, all of these are very significant threats. However, here it comes, the biggest threat to America is not from outside nations, it's from within. The United States is the most blessed nation on earth, and that is because our forefathers gave us a foundation based on God and his word. The biggest threat to our country's future is that we turn our back on God and have his hand of blessing removed.
Our nation was founded on the belief that you do not have to swear allegiance to a God I mean, that's why we left. That's why the founders left the British Isles, because they were being ordered around by the church.
Yeah. And so when he says that stuff, when he says that we're being attacked from within, that means he's declaring war and calling for war on his own fellow Americans.
I know. Look at who he's got around him. Look there at Stephen Miller. I mean, dear Lord, you just look at the man and you can feel the creepy coming off of him. I mean, it ain't even hard to feel. You feel it right through the TV. It's one of those things. Every time that man talks to you, you got to think that people start putting their children away. Son, go in your bedroom, lock the door. I don't want you to come out here and see this.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, that guy, I mean, when you look at him, it's like, they used to say, people look into your eyes to see your soul. There's a dark place there. We're talking black hole time.
The constant projection and people call him Pee Wee Herman Goering and call him a Nazi. He says, no, you're a Nazi when you call me a Nazi. Nazi. And it's the best they got.
It's sort of like, well, gee, my daddy didn't wear the Klan robes. Yours did, Donald.
Yeah, he was. That's one of the things. If you dig deep enough on the Klan story with Fred Trump, he was busted in the robes.
Mm-hmm. Well, the other one used to get to me is, okay, when I refer to him, I don't call him the name he uses. I refer to him by his real name, Drump, D-R-U-M-P-F.
Well, I think
because most people don't know what
I think he was. I think Fred
changed his name.
I think Fred was a Trump. It was Fred's daddy that went from Drumpf to Trump. Because
the reason they did is the thing that people don't talk about, because they were trying to sell things to some of the people in New York of Jewish descent, and originally Drumpf, their family name, is something in Germany that was connected to a regime, a while back.
Really?
And it's like,
because
the
original the Potter Familias came here in the 1860s, 1870s, and then his wife didn't like it here, so they tried to go back, and he got deported from Germany because he too was a coward. The yellow streak runs through that family like the stripe down the middle of a road.
Well, but you do know the other thing about that, though, don't you? It wasn't his great-grandfather that came over. It was his great-great-uncle that came over and brought the great-grandfather over in something that we used to hear a lot about when they first started all this stuff. There's something called chain migration.
Yes. Yeah.
Which he's always said is an awful thing.
Well, it's the same thing that got Melanoma's mommy and daddy over here, too.
Yeah, amazingly enough, they got those special visas that no one else is supposed to get without a whole lot of work. I tell you what, there's sometimes on that family, you just wait. I'm just waiting to see which one of them cracks first. It's going to be kind of like a game. Come on, who's going to do it? I'm figuring. We got to put our money on Fredo. One day he's going to be in the wrong place and say the wrong thing, and they're just going to nail him to a wall. Because, Bob, I'm going to let you go. I'll let you talk to some other people, but I'm sorry to take up your time.
Oh, no apology necessary. I'm just trying to remember the last time we talked.
Oh, God, it's been too damn long, bud.
It has been. Well, don't be such a stranger.
All right, bud. You take it easy. Have a good time, and remind everybody out there you're not professional, so. Please don't figure it out there and drive like you're a professional drinker and driver.
Exactly. Never drink and drive. You might hit a bump and spill your drink. Exactly.
Either down here, our problem is most of the people around here have seen one too many episodes of The Dukes of Hazzard, and they think, yeah, I can clear that.
Oh, I know. The last time I was in Atlanta, you know, eight lanes on either side, and everybody's having their NASCAR moment. And if you ain't rubbing, you ain't racing. And I'm just trying to get off at North Avenue to go over to get a hot dog at the Varsity.
That's the bud, Bobby. You're sitting there, George. You're sitting there right there. You got Georgia Tech on the right side, the Varsity on the left, and you're going, there's like 15, 16 lanes. Which one do I get into? There's no damn signs.
Yeah, good luck. Just, you know, all you can do is wing it.
All righty, bud. Yeah, right. Good evening.
Luke, Happy New Year to you, my friend. Good to hear from you.
You too.
Bye now.
Bye.
I haven't heard from Luke in forever. So, if you want to participate in New Year's Eve on the front porch, jump right in. The link is over at headon.live. And if you can't handle Skype, you can always get in on the stress line, 844-843-4676, 844-THE-HORN. And I mentioned Franklin Graham in talking with Luke, and you know, these followers of the Prince of Peace really do want to get their war on. Back on Sunday, he also went on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda and blamed, you know, the stabbing in New York at the Hanukkah party by a guy who had anti-Semitic writings all over his house, was mentally ill as hell, had a rap sheet and priors. Well, Franklin Graham, who believes that the Jews are going to hell, by the way, because, you know, not Christian. Everybody who doesn't believe exactly like Franklin Graham does is going to hell. Franklin Graham couldn't keep his mouth shut. And he said, the governor was talking about this hate phenomenon across the country. The problem is the human heart. This attack at the Hanukkah party didn't happen with a gun. You can take a stone and kill somebody. The problem is the human heart. There's also political hatred. Now, wait a minute. Now, this is an anti-Semitic guy attacks a Hanukkah party, and suddenly it's about Donald Trump. There's also political hatred. The hatred that we see for Donald Trump is incredible, and the governor who is behind the microphone has been responsible for some of this hatred toward people from the other party. We've got to ask God for help. I blame a lot of people in the media. What in the hell does that even mean? There was an anti-Semitic attack on a Hanukkah party that was caused because people hate Donald Trump? What? Oh, and then there's the shooting over the weekend. There was the Hanukkah party stabbing, and then there was the shooting at the Church of Christ. And that's the same Church of Christ that I've talked about here. You know, the folks that don't even allow so much as a pitch pipe into the church, because it's all got to be a cappella, because you got to sing and make melody in thy heart. White Settlement, Texas. Yes, there really is such a place. It's, a suburb of Fort Worth. And the gunman went in and started shooting. Hint, not a liberal. And then they, because you go to church in Texas and there are people in your church with guns, because you might profess to have faith in Jesus Christ, but you don't have enough faith in Jesus Christ to go to church without guns. And so the guy squeezes off a few rounds, and then I see the news story that says that the gunman was killed within 6 seconds of beginning his attack. Guess what? He still shot people. That's the thing that the gun goobers don't understand. In an ambush, the person who shoots first gets the advantage. You can't protect against it. But once again, the almightiest power in the universe was not as powerful as a guy full of hate with a gun. Kind of tells you something, doesn't it? Go figure. I mean, doesn't having guns in church sort of negate the entire idea that you're worshiping the most powerful thing in the universe, the creator of the universe, knows all, sees all, tells nothing? Hey, Luke, if you're still listening, Rusty wants you to know we need more Luke, so don't be a stranger. Randy in PA says, you know, I wondered why they would let people have assault weapons but wouldn't let people have a bat bazooka, and I think I figured it out. They're both handheld weapons of war, but with a bat bazooka, you could probably take out the side of a police station, which you wouldn't be able to do with an assault weapon. Well, the thing is, Randy, you got to remember that Fat Dead Tony Scalia said that if it was up to him, he would consider legalizing bazookas because they can be carried from place to place. People like Franklin Graham scare me. He would gladly see this country go up in flames as long as it brought to him more power or kept in power the people he needs to be in power in order to continue running his grift. Friedrich Drumpf, James in Illinois, reminds us, made it in Alaska running whores as a bachelor. He moved back to Germany after the turn of the 20th century to find a nice German girl. He was eventually trussed up by the local constabulary and eventually deported for dodging the draft under the Prussian government as an undesirable. That's when he moved to New York as a respectable businessman. I saw a little, brief video the other day about Fred Trump, his Friedrich's son, the Klansman, and how he bought and demolished an indoor amusement park called Steeplechase out on Coney Island, and then turned around, having demolished it, and sold the property to the city of New York and made a hefty killing. Oh, hot diggity. A message coming in from Darlene over in the Facebook chat. Starting the new year off right because I got my Palmans in the mail today. Woohoo! Happy 2020. Happy 2020 to you, Darlene. Enjoy the Palmans. And Ralphs, you should have yours as well. Let us know what you think. So, Sparky, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here. I had to go to the house for a minute to grab my binoculars.
Binoculars?
Yeah, I see things. I'm sitting here with the door open, so I see things over on the ranch.
Oh, okay. Anything interesting?
No, just there's a lump out by the tree where the foxes were.
Did you say a lump or a trump?
A lump.
Give myself a cowbell for that one.
It could be a Trump, maybe. You're laying in the grass there. I don't know.
So are you and Judy going to do corned beef and cabbage or anything tomorrow?
No, we never do any corned beef and cabbage.
Ooh.
Now, my dad used to like it, but I don't like it.
You don't like it? Mm-mm. I was wondering how that might go over in the air fryer.
No, I'd probably go to YouTube and say how to cook a corn.
Yeah, how to cook a corned beef in the air fryer. And there's some woman sitting there, first steal a corned beef.
There's some characters on there. The Southern ladies are just crack up.
And they know what they're doing. Oh, I'm just I'll get up bright and early in the morning and have my jowl, and that makes me happy. So jowl is so much more tasty than bacon.
What I'll have, I might just have try to make a pancake in the air fryer.
That doesn't sound promising.
Well, there's a little pan that they send you, nonstick pan, and you just fill it up with the batter and stick it in there. So I'm going to just experiment. Maybe have an egg too with it or something.
Could be tasty. I think I'm when I fry up my jowl in the morning, I'm going to take some white rice, you know, before it uncooked, and brown it a little bit in that hog jowl grease, and then go forward with that as when I make my Hoppin' John with the black eyed peas and the rice and the tomatoes and the chilies and the onions.
And we'll probably have some leftover tri-tip I might have with the eggs in the morning.
Oh, so you're doing a tri-tip?
Yeah, a small one. We usually buy them and they're so big, we usually cut them in half just for the two of us.
Yeah.
Wow, a dove almost flew in here. Maybe he's outside. Oh, he's outside the door over here.
That could be an omen. It's a dove. Peace.
Well, I see doves all over. I mean, I walked to the house to get the binoculars, and the vulture was flying around. Soaring, rather.
A vulture?
Yeah, a turkey vulture. We got lots of them around here.
Wow.
Keep clean up the roadkill.
Oh, that's their job.
I even saw a dead deer on the side of the road a month or so ago, because usually not any deer down the slope. But you never know what's going to happen. Have you seen those videos of the koalas coming up to people?
Yeah, isn't that just pathetic? It's just heartbreaking. And they're generally, koalas are generally not that friendly.
And then I saw another picture or something of these people who get away from the fire. They got in their boat and went out in the middle of the lake.
Jesus. And they're still, they're still going forward or have gone forward with their fireworks over Sydney Harbor. Here's hoping they don't set Sydney on fire with that.
Well, they're over water. This usually comes out pretty good.
Oh, and Ron in Raleigh has already gone and found it. Here you go, Bob. Air fryer corned beef. It can be done.
I tell you, you can do anything with them.
Well, it looks like it came out pretty. 180 for 40 minutes. And the person reports it came out well. And curiously, it was a guy in Australia. So, will anybody be putting off fireworks or anything this night, this evening near you, or is it all going to be pretty quiet?
No, it's one of those people shoot off shotguns and stuff.
Oh, that's even more fun.
And then if anybody has fireworks, they shoot it off. You know, some people get rockets from somewhere and they fire them off. But shotguns doesn't travel very far if you know where to shoot them and which way to shoot them. I could shoot from here towards the pasture if I had a shotgun, but I gave it away.
Oh, this is interesting. Did you see the comment that Grandpa Joe made up in New Hampshire? That he would consider a Republican running mate?
Oh, I seem to have saw something about that, but I didn't.
Jesus, really? I mean, he wants to be bipartisan so bad.
Why?
I guess because he thinks that it. Because he believes in unicorns. In it, best I got.
Yeah, but the Republicans have all drank the Kool-Aid by now. They're not coming back. The only way to get a new Republican Party is get rid of them. Let it die on the vine.
Oh, and in regard to the koalas in Australia, Cynthia just wrote in. On the heartbreaking side, you just mentioned about the koalas. Don't you just know that if Australia was down to their last breeding pair, Eric and Don Jr. would be falling all over themselves to go shoot them? That's so true. So true. And Cynthia says, as for tonight, I don't have any champagne, so I'm going to be having a whiskey. Whiskey works.
We used to have a eucalyptus forest off the side of the freeway down south. Simpson paper was growing for paper. That would have been perfect for koalas.
Yeah, they love that stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think I'd ever seen eucalyptus until that one time I went to the Bay Area, and it was all over the place. It was like an invasive species.
Yeah, well, it was bought over here. A lot of people bought it over for windbreaks and stuff. Planting it from Australia.
Wow, I didn't realize that.
We had them all over the place in willows where I lived.
Well, I'll tell you what, this is just creeping me out, this story about Biden wanting a Republican running mate. When the woman asked him, he said, the answer is I would, but I can't think of one now. Let me explain that. You know, there's some really decent Republicans that are out there still, but here's the problem right now. They've got to step up. Name one. Honest to Jesus. How is it that these people get to ask the questions and none of the people who have actually asked the meaningful questions ever get an opportunity? Those decent Republicans, Joe Biden, name one. One.
I think the decent ones are all dead.
Yeah, and I mean, those moderate Republicans, they're like unicorns and leprechauns. They're tooth fairies and Easter bunnies. They're imaginary.
Well, there's Bill Well from Massachusetts.
Yeah, and how's that working out for him? They won't even let him mount a primary challenge.
No.
Oh, wait a second. I just had a note from Ron in Raleigh. Hey, Bob, I think since it's late in the year and there's been a paucity of Crocodile Kincaid, I think we should have Crocodile Kincaid read the recipe for air fryer corned beef. All right. Air fryer corned beef. Air fryers unite. Australia. Ingredients. So, chest winged it again. 950 gram piece coated in garlic flakes and cooked on 180 for 40 minutes. Rested for 10 bloody awesome. And result, bloody awesome result and plenty flavor. Not much Mike Hogan can't cooked. That's as far as the recipe really goes.
Darlene's here to tell you about the Parliament.
Hey, Darlene.
Hi, guys.
Palmond Paradise?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. I'm trying to, like, control it. So, like, I'm tracking how many I'm eating.
Are you?
All,
yeah, you're tin's barely open, and you're already rationing.
Oh my God, am I ever? Because I'll tell you, they're like potato chips. You can't eat just one, and it's very easy to just keep eating and eating and eating them. And I am trying to drop a few pounds. So this came at like the worst time, but it came at the best time too.
But they're healthy and nutritious.
Oh, yes, they are. Oh, yeah. Yes, absolutely. That's what I'll tell myself. Exactly. No, they are very tasty. And thank you to, is it Paul from Parts Unknown? Is
Paul,
that how you
Yep, that's
it?
Paul from Parts Unknown.
In Oregon. So thank you, Paul. They are delightful. And you can see that every one is made with love.
Every year I wonder, but then they're just gone too fast. But every year, Darlene, I wonder if you had one of those really, really kick-ass grinders. What it would be like to make almond butter with some of the palmins.
Ooh, I never thought about that.
I mean, that roasty, toasty, wonderful, salty flavor.
Yeah, I think that, when you said that, I was thinking like, you know, when people do almond milk, but I don't think that would work as well. But I think a butter would be really nice.
Yeah. Oh,
that would be really nice. Yeah.
On some grilled sourdough, almond butter, and a few slices of banana.
Ooh, well, I think you just have to, you'd probably just have to take some almonds and grind them up, right? Right, I mean that's pretty
yeah, but
much
it,
all you
it takes
do.
A it takes a it takes a grinder with a pretty powerful motor. Maybe one of those maybe one of those ninjas would pull it off. But years and years and years ago, my mother had an actual peanut butter machine.
Ooh.
And it would grind them because it's got to grind and it's got to kind of emulsify.
But would you need to add an oil? Or there's enough oil in the almonds.
I think they're oily enough.
Yeah. So then basically it would just be something that's a real really powerful grinder that really, I think it would be nice if it was totally smooth. So not like with the little bits that you get in some of the ground peanut butter and
you're a creamy and not a chunky girl.
Exactly. I'm a creamy, not a chunky girl. Exactly, because I sometimes think the chunky can be a little too much.
Yeah, I'm not into the chunky either. I don't want to chew my peanut butter.
Exactly. It's kind of like the double stuffed Oreos. It's almost like too much. Like the chunky peanut butter is too much for me personally. Like double stuffed Oreos. Too much.
Yeah. Now you're up there. You're up in civilization. Have you seen and or tried the Numinos?
No.
You know, I love that Paul Newman brand.
Yes.
Because all proceeds to charity. And the cool thing about the Numinos is they'll tell you on the front of the package, no palm oil. So they taste like Oreos used to taste. And they don't have any palm oil, so you know that, no palm forests have been, or no forests have been cut down to raise palms.
But weren't they using palm oil before? I think the Newman O's, because I had tried those in the past, and I wasn't too impressed with them, but I thought they had used palm oil in the past. And maybe they, kind of eliminated that. I'm wondering about that because I thought they had used palm oil because I think that had been an ingredient, a major ingredient in a lot of his products, right? And that maybe they saw that it's not good for.
Well, I've noticed that they've given up palm oil and they've also given up high fructose corn syrup.
Yes, good. Yeah, no, I drink their his organic coffee. Like I do the K-Cups. Those are the ones I really only like. I really like it, and it keeps like it doesn't cause my colitis to get out of whack, because coffee's really bad. So I'll have like one cup a day, and I like his the best.
Well, I recently had to road trip because there are no Krogers around here, and we've got a wonderful manifestation of a grocery chain called Publix. It's employee owned. It's probably the nicest grocery store I've ever been in.
That's awesome. I love that. I love it when I hear that people, like the employees or the public, own stuff because when they do, it's usually the best.
Yeah, it's Publix, and the only thing they don't have is access to that magnificent Kroger private selection line. So I had to toddle off 40 miles to find a Kroger's so that I could get my decaf.
Whoa, 40 miles.
Yeah. Woo.
Yeah, because decaf is tough. Like, my attitude is, and I give you a lot of credit for doing the decaf, but my attitude is like, what's the point in having decaf, right?
It's decades and decades of loving the taste.
Exactly. And then, so if you find something you really love,
yeah,
everything else pales. I mean, you're already compromising in a way because you're not going with a caffeinated. So you want something that if you're going to compromise and go with decaf, you want something you really, really love. And, so you're willing to travel miles to get it.
And the thing is, so many decafs are processed with formaldehyde.
Yes. Yeah, I know. It's not that. I know.
And without fail, that's the decaf that tastes like shit.
Exactly. Yep.
And if I can't have this coffee or something that I know is a really high quality roast, you're right. There's no point. But this stuff tastes like coffee. So I get up every morning. I've got myself a little pour over set up and I've got a little goosenecked hot pot. So I put my grounds in the pour over thing. And then, you know, like a real barista with absolutely obsessive compulsive attention to detail, I just gently pour that small, tiny little stream of boiling water over the grounds, and it makes a pretty good cup of coffee, and you wind up with some sediment in the bottom, but, you know, what in this life is perfect, right?
Right, and there's still, obviously, it's not a 100% caffeine-free, so you're probably getting a small amount of it.
Yeah, you are.
Enough to, you know, keep you satiated, but not push you over the.
Well, you remember the Dread Pirate Roberts in The Princess Bride?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And how he slowly acclimated himself to iocane powder.
Yes.
Well, I've done something similar with caffeine. So now, if I can tolerate enough of it that I can make myself a cup of green tea or oolong. And I can handle that much caffeine, and it'll just put a little spring in my step.
Right, and the difference with the tea versions is that it's not all at once. I think it's more of a slower disbursement of the caffeine into your system. So I think it's a little bit healthier. It's like natural to the tea. I'm not a big fan of tea. I tried it, and you know, my tea is like hot water with lemon. I love that. Like, I could live off of that. But I need my caffeine kick. And if I don't have it, I feel literally like if I try to go cold turkey, which is not advisable, but sometimes if my colitis, if I have a flare up, I need to do that. I literally feel like I either have the flu or Lyme disease.
Ew.
For the first 2 days, it's horrible. Yeah. So, but I actually like the K-cup versions because it keeps the amount of coffee controlled. Because if it left up to me, you know, where I have to put my own coffee, like measure out my own coffee, I tend to wind up overdoing it over time. So obviously I have a caffeine addiction. So I'd rather have it controlled. And at this point I find like a couple of sips in the morning, you know, of my coffee. Typically I don't even finish the one cup. Is enough to kind of just like instantaneously get me awake. And I think it kind of revives my body. Like, it gets my body going, which due to my muscular disease, it really helps a lot. It gives me a little bit of that adrenaline shot, that little bit of energy kick that I need. So like, for example, to climb a flight of stairs, which is very difficult for me with my disability. So there's a certain physiological help or aid that it provides, but I have to really control it. Otherwise it causes another problem, an intestinal problem. So
oh joy.
I have to be careful. Yeah. So it's that double-edged sword thing. But that koala there, I don't know if you had seen my quick message to you on Facebook. I think that koala must have been hand reared at one point, the one that had come up to the cyclists. because that koala, that little koala bear there from Australia looked a little too familiar with humans, seemed a little too familiar to humans. Clearly a very smart animal. I don't know what their intelligence level is normally, if they're as smart as, you know, elephants or whatever. I've never heard about the intelligence capacity of a koala bear, but I'm thinking that little koala might have been hand-reared at one point and was familiar with humans.
Well, it's entirely possible, because we live in the era of misinformation and disinformation and distortion.
Right, and I'm not saying the cyclists were distorting anything. They seemed just as surprised,
no.
And they were kind and trying to help this poor animal. But I had a situation where many, many years ago, I had two black crows flying at me. When I was physically more able-bodied to be able to do it, I had more mobility. I used to go for walks in the next town over in this beautiful country lane, and I would go for walks, and I was trying to get out of my this just old broken down Camry that I had, Toyota Camry, and these birds, actually before I got out of the car, these birds landed on my windshield. They were pecking at the windshield, they were pecking, they were trying to get in, and I was God, I felt like I was in some sort of a scene out of, you know, Alfred Hitchcock's The Birds. And I waited till they flew off. They went into the pasture next to where my car was parked, because it's all farmland. And I said, well, I came all the way down here. I'm damn well going for my walk. Well, these birds started flying at me. There were two adult black crows. They came at me. And I started freaking out and flailing my arms and, like, screaming. And then there was this farmer in one of the other fields who saw me, and he got off the tractor, and he was very kind. He came down the hill and he said, those two crows were hand reared. They were found as chicks, and they were just released a few weeks ago. He said, and one is the shadow of the other. So once he explained it to me, I'm like, okay. So I named them Leader and Shadow. And I freaking loved these two crows. They were so incredibly intelligent. So every week I'd go down there for a walk, they spot me, and they would come to me, and they would land on my shoulder and on my foot. They would grab my glasses, because I had, like, metal glasses frames on my face, and I would feed them. I would give them water, and they loved cheese and crackers. And I just adored these two birds. And one of the other farmers in the area, there were like three or four of them, were like, why don't you just take them home with you? Just put them in a box and take them home. Nobody's going to know. But unfortunately, I lived in an apartment, and the landlord was a real asshole. He had moved into one of the units, and he had a handgun, and he would go out and, like, shoot, like, target practice. And I'm like, he'll shoot them. He'll go out, he'll shoot them. And they were such intelligent birds. And then the other farmer who said, why don't you just take them home? You know, he had mentioned offhand, he said, well, you know, they're starting to bond with other wild crows in the area. And so I kind of filed that away, but every day, almost every day, I went down there to see them. I just, and they would, like, they would find there was a building nearby, and they kept the key to the building up on top of a ledge. Well, of course, crows like anything that's shiny. So they would grab the key and drop it on top of me as I was feeding them. It was just the funniest thing. But one day I went down there, and they were flying around with two other crows. So there were four of them. And the moment they saw me, they separated from the other two crows and came to me. And I realized I'm screwing up their bonding process.
Oh.
With wild crows. And I'm like, I can't do this anymore. So I couldn't take them. I actually asked my father, he has 5 private acres. And I said, would you be willing to take them? He's like, no, they shit all over the place. And I don't know. So I'm like, all right, this is not meant for me to have these two wonderful animals, these two birds as pets. And I named them Leader and Shadow, because he said one is the shadow of the other. So Leader and Shadow. And I said, I have to let them go. I have to, you know, so I stopped going there to allow them to bond. And I think I waited, I walked in other places and everything else. And then I went back there like 6 months later and I was walking around and they never came to me. I never saw them again. So they happily, they had bonded with other wild crows in that area.
Well, they do, and they do. They bond very closely.
Yes, they're like family. Yes, they're incredibly intelligent animals and they're very family oriented.
And it, well, and I think they pair bond.
Yes.
Yeah. And of course, if you go back in your Scandinavian mythology, and you may have even seen it if you watched American Gods, Odin is attended by a pair of crows. Hunan and Munin.
Hunan and Munin.
Mm-hmm. It's memory and something in memory or memory in something. Agnes would know. I don't know if she's listening or not, but
hey, Agnes, if you are.
Oh, well, and Robert in Australia says, I'm sorry to say this, but koalas are pretty much done as a species. Their numbers have been in decline for ages, and now their habitat's gone. It's only a matter of time.
That's heartbreaking.
Robert's got a little background for us. The koala with the cyclists was a wild koala. Normally, they won't approach people. They're very shy creatures. The koalas are just desperate at this point, high temperatures and nothing to eat. Yesterday, it was 106 degrees Fahrenheit at 5 p.m.
I'm so sorry, Robert.
A change came through, and it was down to 77 Fahrenheit by 6. The fireworks went ahead. No fires were reported as a result. Meanwhile, it's gotten so bad, Robert says, the Army and Navy have been called in to support firefighters in New South Wales and Victoria. Our PM, what's his name? I think Robert refuses to actually utter or write his name. Yeah.
Asshole.
Yeah, asshole. Our PM, what's his name, has offered our volunteer firefighters $6,000 compensation for the weeks they've spent fighting fires.
Nothing. That's nothing.
Robert says, I mentioned yesterday in Mallacoota, people evacuating to the beach, and provides a link to the Australian Broadcasting Corporation. Robert notes, it looks like the footage was shot at night. It is the middle of the day.
Oh, Jesus, from all the smoke. Oh, yeah. My gosh. I'm so sorry. I feel sorry. American, we're partly responsible for this because we have an asshole in the White House who's trying to deny climate change. I mean, it's like California and like Australia, they seems to be point zero. The Maldives, another point zero, or ground zero, if you will say, ground zero for climate change. And, you know, I mean, we base things on our own experience. So that's basically talking about the experience I had with the crows.
Yeah.
Why I was thinking this koala seems so familiar with humans, but they're clearly very intelligent creatures. And
that's why I said,
and it's heartbreaking.
That's why I said what I said yesterday. And I'm not trying to pick scabs from 2016 or anything like that, but if climate change matters, if the climate emergency, the climate crisis matters, then we really cannot afford the luxury of doing anything that is not geared in between now and November. Everything we do has to be geared toward removing Donald Trump from office.
Yes. Yeah, it's desperation time.
I mean, at best, we have 9 years or less to start the turnaround in earnest. And meanwhile, we've got idiots like the woman I focused on last night.
Yep.
Who want to burn more hydrocarbons. I mean, what do you... I can't get my mind around these... If a house is on fire and somebody is standing there saying, no, it's not, what does that, what does that tell you about them? They're either deliberately evil or they are hopelessly mentally not okay. I mean, we've got a story out of West Virginia today. I mentioned it on air maybe a month or more ago. You remember the photograph of the prison guard trainees, cadets, whatever we call them, here in West Virginia, and they were photographed giving the Nazi salute?
Yes, that was like the top headline on CNN today.
Well, yeah, it took over.
It was disgusting.
Yeah, it took Jim Justice, the Republican governor, more than a month to decide that the state of West Virginia should fire Nazis.
And, you know, they
and we still don't know their names. And their faces are still blurred.
Yes, thank you. Yep, I was just going
to
say.
And so how are we supposed to protect ourselves against them?
That's a good question. Why are they protecting their identities? Why the fuck are they protecting their identities? That's a really good question.
Well, I think among other things, you know, they're all Republicans, right?
Of course.
And remember, Jim Justice is Donald Trump only fatter. and those little Nazis giving the stiff arm salute in that photograph, those aren't Nazis. That's his base. Those are the very fine people that Trump was talking about in the aftermath of Charlottesville. So they're
bringing in the Biden thing about possibly having a Republican vice president.
Oh, that just made me eat dirt and run rabbits.
That to me is like, well, I wonder if it's a combination. I mean, Bernie Sanders has talked about greed as being a sickness, an illness. And this woman that you mentioned yesterday on your program clearly is ill, or, you know, there's something wrong with her. Biden, I think, is just, well, I've always maintained, I've always said, and I've repeatedly put that in emails to you and, you know, during your program, that Biden has repeatedly shown a penchant for poor judgment. His entire political career is rife with examples of poor judgment.
And the
I
Hill,
think Biden is utterly clueless.
The Iraq war vote. And the thing is, we're all, if he's the nominee, we're all going to have to shut up and swallow.
Exactly. Exactly. And I'm not necessarily sanguine that he's going to be any better. I'm
just sincerely hoping that he will go ahead and flame out.
I think he will be. I'm sorry.
I was just saying, I sincerely hope he just goes ahead and flames out after Iowa and New Hampshire and Nevada and South Carolina.
Same here. You know, and as a woman, you know, and other women that are very progressive minded, we don't like him at all. We know he's an idiot. And there's base, you know, okay, you can give him the, you know, Violence Against Women's Act, which I don't quite understand his role there when you think about how he treated Anita Hill. He's just all over the map. And I personally feel like he will be a disaster as president. And if we'll see a Republican in there again after the first term, one term Biden. And I'm hoping that either Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren can somehow surpass him and get him out, because I will be holding my nose as I go into the voting booth, probably.
Well, even more so than I did
Hillary Clinton.
Drives me bananas, Darlene, because Joe Biden believes things that aren't true. Especially this notion that there are good and decent Republicans out there with whom he can work to put this country back on track.
It must be that Beltway, inside the Beltway. Insanity.
It's like he's not paying attention. It's like he hasn't been paying attention since Bill Clinton was president.
Right. He's clueless. He's clueless or willfully.
It's the willful
ignorant
part that I think scares me the most. And then you get these other candidates that give me a case of the horrors. Like for instance, well, where'd it go? I got a clip from Pete Buttigieg, and he's proving to be a special brand of amazing, and not in a good way.
Right. Yep.
Now, and again, just to be sure, be clear, I'm not endorsing any candidates.
Right.
But how do you not point out our problems or problems in a campaign when they're right there in front of your face and are more or less unavoidable? I don't think you're going to be able to hear this clip, but I think everybody else will.
Okay.
What it has to do with is Pete Buttigieg explaining Pete Buttigieg's, I think this is the clip where he explains his theory of the ratification of the Constitution and the role that slaveholders played in it. This is American history. This is stuff that can be that's documented. This is stuff that you can go and find in public primary source materials.
Bob, real quick, if I douse my microphone on Skype and I listen to the head-on live on my computer, will I interfere with your program?
No, I don't think so. Okay. But the problem is, you'll probably be about 30 seconds behind real time, okay, like you are here.
All right, well, maybe then I'll just wait and maybe you can explain what he said after it's done. Go ahead.
So the bottom line is that, and what an excuse. He says that slave owners did not know. Get that. Did not know that slavery was wrong. This is it.
Similarly, the amendment process, they were wise enough to realize that they didn't have all the answers and that some things would change. A good example of this is something like slavery or civil rights. It's an embarrassing thing to admit, but the people who wrote the Constitution did not understand that slavery was a bad thing and did not respect civil rights. And yet they created a framework so that as the generations came to understand that that was important, they could write that into the Constitution too and ensure true equal protection for all of them. Similarly, the amendment process. They were wise enough to realize that they didn't have all the answers. And that's
okay, so that's one of those out into the yard to run rabbits and eat dirt moments. And here's the worst part of it. In his explanation that slave owners didn't understand that slavery was wrong, he is saying that, Darlene, he is saying that to children.
Ooh, oh man, talk about revisionist history. That's bad.
I mean, they knew it was wrong because they were willing to hold the entire idea of our government hostage to their ability to keep slavery as a going concern.
They committed treason to do it.
And meanwhile, Devin noting, and you know, Devin, don't hide how you feel, buddy. Biden's a fucking Klansman whose best friend in the whole world was Strom Thurmond. I shall not vote for him no matter what. Well, enjoy four more years of Donald Trump.
That's the trade-off.
If he's the nominee, then, you know, if you can't vote for whoever the Democratic nominee is, then climate change is no big deal. The climate emergency is no big deal. Children in cages, no big deal.
And you know, and see, that's where Bernie Sanders is very honest when he says it's not about, it's not me, it's us. That, you know, I think Americans tend, and we're busy, you know, like Tracy had said it, you know, this is by design. This is by design. We're trying to survive in this brutal country. You know, so we think that, oh, okay, we make the right choice. We elect this president, and we think, okay, we're done. And he will do the right thing, or she, eventually, hopefully. And that's not the case. It's like the work has just begun. The work has only just begun. Because we have to push that president to do the right thing.
And right? You know,
wasn't that, you know, like LBJ said, make me do, or no, FDR, FDR, make me do it.
Yeah.
Push me to do this.
And we can pressure any Democratic
our
president.
Job is,
we can pressure any Democratic president. Yeah, pressuring Donald Trump doesn't matter. It doesn't work.
Was it Devin, who lives also in your lives in Virginia, who
West Virginia,
said,
yeah,
you know, he didn't want to vote. That, to him, I say, you know, this is where, if we're stuck with him as a nominee, he's far better than Trump is going. Trump will be like on. It'll be Trump on steroids if he gets a second term, or steals. I'm going to say steals a second term because he stole the first one. But this is where we can push Biden to do the right thing, and he has made adjustments because the outcry and certain things that happened in his campaign, he's made adjustments to certain things,
you know,
where
I
the
give,
pushback was
right,
so
I give,
significant.
I give Biden credit, for instance, for having called for marriage equality before Barack Obama did. He put Obama in a spot and on the spot.
Yeah, Obama dragged his heels. Like, Obama needed to know people who were gay or lesbian in his own administration, I think, in order to realize that they're just like him and Michelle, and that they're people that they love dearly, that they wanted to be married to. And he had to learn that over time, that, yeah, you know, they're just like me and heterosexual, and that they want to be married, because he was against that before.
Yeah. So civil unions,
you know,
yeah. Yeah, and
civil unions, yeah, and Cory Booker.
And I hate myself for even saying this, but it is an unavoidable consideration. How long can we ask Ruth Bader Ginsburg to hang on?
I know.
You know, I'm heartbroken over John Lewis.
Yes. It is heartbreaking because he's in fourth stage. Man,
yeah.
Not easy.
And I hope
we're losing our great black leaders, our great African-American leaders in the Senate, which we desperately need them with a lot. And now John Lewis.
And
part of this,
Darlene, though, is sort of a systemic mistake that we have made on this side. And that is that we have not developed our bench, to use a sporting analogy. Mm-hmm. We've not developed our bench nearly as well as we should have. And so so our leaders across the board are septuagenarians and nearly octogenarians. And I'll piss people off saying this, but I worry. It's not ageism. It is, you know, if the average human life expectancy was 130, I wouldn't be sweating the idea of an octogenarian president.
Correct, but in the biblical sense. But let me tell you something, Bob. This is happening on a local level. This is endemic to the Democratic Party generally, because
no,
I've come up against it on the local level. They're fucking over the younger generations because the establishment Democrats can't give up the power. We're seeing it. I experienced it personally in the last couple of months to my great chagrin and stress in my own town. They don't want to give up the power. You've got 70, 80, 60-year-olds, which are a little bit younger, but they're minions. They're still – it's like they don't want to give up the power and make – or at least step in and make room for younger people that want to serve the communities. This is a problem with the Democratic Party, like at all levels, just saying. And I'm talking from experience. So what you're saying on the national level, it doesn't surprise me. You got somebody
and then,
like
and then you get
Cory
down,
Booker,
you get down
Booker,
here.
Yeah, Cory Booker, yeah. Who sent me an email today, and he's struggling to raise money by the end of the year. They're like, yeah. He's like $79,000-$80,000 short of his $800,000. And he's come out as, you know, presenting himself as the reasoned voice, you know, of the Democratic candidates for president. But he can't seem to get the traction.
No.
And he's young. Yeah.
And that's, you know, it's too damn bad. Because, you know, the reason I worry about having octogenarian candidates and octogenarian office holders is because... Well, consider. I think all three, the incumbent president and the two leading contenders for the Democratic nomination, I think all three are past the average life expectancy for an American male.
Yes.
I mean, isn't that a little bit creepy inducing? Because the
yes,
you know, what
I
pointed out in the past
saw
is
that.
This it's been a long time since
where
this.
A doctor said that. Sorry, go ahead.
No, you please.
About Bernie Sanders, real quick. That his doctor said that he's perfectly healthy post heart attack. Did you see that headline?
Yeah.
It came out yesterday, I think it was. So just throwing that out there.
No, that
I don't know whether or not to believe that.
Well, there's perfectly healthy, and then there's perfectly healthy for somebody who's going to be an octogenarian in another year.
And in the White House.
Yeah.
the stress on that. Particular job from that job, I think, is extraordinary and unique.
And it's worrisome.
It is worrisome.
I just want to be understood as not trying to engage in so-called ageism,
right?
But to simply talk about natural human processes and what's at stake here. And you know. You got Pete, who's plenty young, and then he opens his mouth and he proves it. Slaveholders yes. didn't know slavery was wrong. I forget who the South Carolinian was, but he made the statement that slavery was not only not wrong, but that it was a net social good. And that kind of crazy shit makes your eyes roll back in your head. And this is our little community, Darlene. So, you know, we can say this amongst ourselves. It scares me. And I don't like acting from fear. I think most of them are good candidates, except Tulsi. The only reason she could come up with to criticize Trump was because he fired missiles into Syria. That's what makes, according to her, the quote from her, that's what makes him unfit for office. Jesus.
And wouldn't that be something that Vladimir Putin would agree with?
Probably, and certainly Bashar mm-hmm. al-Assad would. And then you got Michael Bloomberg, you know, Gollum with money.
I think of Sandra. Say he's too short.
Yeah, no, she's right.
She's right.
Dude was paying prison labor to do his fucking robocalls. And today, he and his campaign admitted that the story is essentially correct. That he was using prison labor to run his campaign, his campaign operations.
He's a fucking billionaire.
Yeah. He was using women in a women's prison to make robocalls.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, he's starting off on the right foot, isn't he? This is messed up. I mean, I just wonder if it's just such dysfunctionality when you talk about our political.
Well, the other thing that gives me the creeps is, you know, if his poll numbers start looking bad in an election year, he has thus far managed to not be too much of a warmonger. But that will end. And imagine Trump starting a war and being nuts at the same time.
Well, that's in his back pocket.
I mean, talk about waltzing into 1939.
Yeah, no, that's in his back pocket. I think he's got that as a final hand to deal.
Yeah.
And I don't know if he's smart enough to come up with that himself, or there's something in the back of his gray matter or what's left of it that he remembers, you know, Bush and. He might even blame Clinton to a certain degree. Well, he started an issue when he was running into trouble. You know, wasn't there somebody that Clinton went after or sent fighters out to bomb? I can't remember. And Clinton was accused of trying to do a deflection. Maybe it was during the Lewinsky scandal.
The term was wag the dog.
Correct.
And it was the missile attack in... maybe Nigeria, trying to chase down Al Qaeda.
Yeah, it wasn't
recognized. There was one in Sudan.
That's what it was, Sparky. Sudan. Good call. Thank you.
Thanks, Sparky. Thank you.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, they screamed,
"Wag the dog" over Kosovo, and yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he doesn't.
And then
I guess there's
this headline now.
Go ahead.
Sorry, my apologies because I think I might be cutting you out, so I can't hear you as well. But there's this headline of John Roberts. Did you see that?
No, what?
Americans take democracy for granted. These people are so clueless. Chief Justice's comments come as some federal judges have publicly criticized Trump for his attacks on legal decisions and judges. So we're being lectured by John Roberts amongst all of this.
About democracy. The guy who said there's no more racism in America.
Yeah. I'm trying to get this CNN CNN just, it's like the main headline here. I'm having, check CNN, you'll see. Oh, yeah. Americans may take democracy for granted. Oh, wow. In our age when social media can instantly spread rumor and false information on a grand scale, the public's need to understand our government and the protections it provides is ever more vital. Roberts wrote in his annual report on the state of the judiciary, issued each New Year's Eve. Attempt to bolster federal judges across the country and shore up the reputation of the judicial branch has dissolved into a bitter morass. We should celebrate our strong and independent judiciary, a key source of national unity and stability, he said.
Wonder how he feels about all those not qualified judges.
Yeah, really.
Because the Supreme Court is the final word, not only on the decisions that the federal that are issued below, but they are also the final word on administering the entire federal court system. And so consequently, these judges who are going to be rendering terrible decisions are going to be doing it ostensibly under the imprimatur of John Balls and Strikes Roberts.
Well, he says we should reflect, quote, we should reflect on our duty to judge without fear or favor, deciding each matter with humility, integrity, and dispatch. Do our best to maintain the public's trust that we are faithfully discharging our solemn obligation to equal justice under the law.
My aching back.
And I guess his mother, he's motherless. His mother just died a couple of days ago. Rosemary Roberts passed away. So they mentioned that in this article, which is interesting.
Well, I just saw CNN's list of the 12 most egregious lies of 2019 as perpetrated by Donald Trump month by month. The lie of the month in January, hell, that was so long ago, we've probably forgotten it. The lie of the month in January was when he told the stories, and you know he got off telling them, about the women who've been duct taped and gagged and trafficked across the desert because it doesn't have a wall. Jesus.
Well, apparently, who's the author of this article? Ariane DeVoge. I'm probably pronouncing it. I'm butchering the name. My apologies. CNN Supreme Court reporter. And apparently, he said that without him, Roberts noted that Judge Merrick Garland, President Barack Obama's nominee to the High Court, who was denied a confirmation hearing by Senate Republicans, has spent two decades, quote, quietly volunteering, unquote, at a local and elementary school. Quote, says Roberts wrote, I am confident that many other federal judges, without fanfare or acclaim, are playing similar selfless roles throughout the country, unquote.
In other words, he's guessing. Him. Yeah, no. No, he has the ethics and morals of a banana slug. Or, the banana slug may be more ethical and more moral. Jesus.
Oh, my God.
Meanwhile, an observation from Brother Deacon Asa. Why can't Trump, you know, we mentioned John Lewis and his disclosure. Why can't Trump, with his fucked up lifestyle, be the one announcing stage 4 cancer? Why is the goddess of irony not doing her damn job?
Yeah.
Because Brother Deacon Asa, evil is a preservative. Plain and simple.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, like the good die young, right? That saying. But it's from Billy Joel.
Yeah. I'd rather laugh with the sinners than cry with the saints.
Well, we'll hope, you know, that John Lewis somehow miraculously, you know.
Yes, like I said before, send him to wherever Ruth Bader Ginsburg went.
Exactly. Yeah, because I think it's somewhere in New York, right?
Yeah.
Is it in New York, Bob?
Yeah, maybe Cedars-Sinai, I'm not sure.
Yeah, because she, you know, she's a petite, tiny little thing, you know. She doesn't have a lot of meat on her, you know what I mean? Sometimes I think if you're very thin like that, there isn't much there. There's a cancer can consume you very quickly. That's just my opinion. Yeah. You know, based on what I've seen from people who were very, very thin and they got cancer and they just boom, they were gone in a very short period.
And I need to watch that. I need to watch that biopic about her. What was it called? By Reason of Sex.
Yeah, it looks like it'd be very, very interesting. Yeah, you know, and. You know she's hanging on. She's hanging on for all of us. Who knows how long that's going
to be. But we have to do our job.
Yeah.
And that is that is vote blue no matter who. And it frustrates me no end to know that my vote doesn't matter. Not in the primary process, it doesn't. My vote in the primary does not matter because our primary doesn't roll around till May. So the people in New Hampshire and Iowa with whom I have so very little in common are going to make my choice for me. And it pisses me off.
Yeah, it's extremely upsetting. And, I have actually, it's interesting because I think Bernie Sanders has been a master at using Facebook to get his message across, because pretty much every night there's a live speech that he's making on Facebook. I don't know. Have you seen those?
Yeah, I have.
Yeah. And I'm becoming, and again, 2016 and the lead up to that is almost like a distant memory to a certain degree. But I think that platform has been refamiliarizing me with him. And I think he's been doing a really terrific job at utilizing Facebook to try to, get his message out and his message across. And there's a part of me that's like, is there a possibility that he and Elizabeth Warren could become a team, president and vice president, whichever. But then because of their respective ages, that makes whoever is the House Speaker all the more critical.
Yeah.
And these are things like I think of, and I'm sure you are thinking of as well, because we're right now, if they convict and remove, Trump, which is not going to happen, and then the same happens with and then they do the same with Pence, then Nancy Pelosi is president. So what happens if the tables are turned, things are flipped? And that's not to say, Elizabeth Warren is, I will say straight out and out, Elizabeth Warren is in significantly better physical condition than I am. I mean, she seems like she's healthy, she can run, all of that stuff. I would even say Bernie Sanders is in significantly better physical condition than I am as somebody with a genetic disability. So, I have a lot of respect for them. I love septuagenarians, octogenarians, sure, whatever, sexagenarians, but I do worry about that because the unique stressors of that office, it kind of kicks it into a different level. And remember when Obama was president, they were getting on his case because I think he had high cholesterol. Do you remember that?
Yeah. Oh, no, he does. Yeah.
It was just like one little issue. Other than that, he was trim, physically fit, looking good.
And was going to live to be 200.
Exactly. But he had that one little issue with his cholesterol, and he made a big fucking deal out of it. And, of course, he liked to smoke, which does put a lot of stress on the heart and that kind of thing. But it seems like he was able to kick that, which I know you are trying to do in your life.
Working at
difficult
it.
Habit to kick. And working on it, and it's not easy. And but he, he was fairly young, and when you think about that photograph of them in that in the Situation Room.
Yep.
When you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Admiral McRaven, and they're doing going after Osama bin Laden. You could see the stress in his face. You could see it. Hillary Clinton, same thing. They were freaking out. This was a big deal because his presidency wrote on it,
Yeah.
And one of the interesting things is in the book Facts and Fears by James Clapper, which I'm like halfway. I mean, that book is so damn dense. I had been taking it out from the library like month after month after month. And I said, God damn it, I'm just going to buy the book and read it at my own leisure. That, he's brilliant. And his writing is extremely detailed and very, very dense. And, was talking about that time when Ed Snowden, is that his name? Edward Snowden?
Yeah.
Yeah. Stole all of the information from the intelligence community and was like, you know, letting everyone know about what, you know, had happened in all of the shenanigans that were going on with the intelligence community and Americans and blah, blah, blah. They had to tell Barack Obama that this was going to, that Snowden was going to release all this classified information.
Right.
He writes in his book, Clapper says that he drew the short straw. As DNI, I guess they all drew straws, you know, him, Brennan, Mueller, all of them. And he goes, I got the short straw. I had to go and tell Barack Obama, President Obama, that this information, that, you know, Edward Snowden was going to come out with this information. And he said that he had never seen Barack Obama like be in this slow boil. Like, he was so angry that this was going to come out. And he had said, you know, look, this is, we're about ready to present the ACA, Obamacare. We have so much that we want to do in Congress right now, so many laws and everything we want to pass. Do you realize what has happened here, that this is going to potentially screw all this up? So you have this young president who has all these incredible policy things that he wants to do. And he said that, you know, Clapper was like, oh, crap, I never thought about this on the political end of things, because he's wrapped up in the intelligence community stuff. But Obama's like, hey, you know, you're screwing up my legacy. This screwed up my legacy, potentially. And he said that he kept it under control, but that he said Obama was in like this slow, angry boil during the conversation. So it's an extremely high stress thing. There's so many things, like, I don't know how they can even make a determination about what to do for foreign policy, because
there is no foreign policy.
Correct, because everything that your advisors present to you, you know, the Clappers, the Brennans, the, you know, whatever, and I'm using, you know, ones that actually were intelligent, not like what we have now
right.
under Trump. But basically, they all, every alternative or suggestion they present is like the best idea possible. And they're all trying to clamor for what they think would be the best, you know, decision to make. You know, and ultimately lands on the president's desk in terms of what decision he decides to make. Why it's critical you have somebody who's able to handle, who's relatively young, you know, can handle that stress and isn't messed up like what we have, you know, sitting in the White House right now. And it brings me back to Biden, because the decision to go after Osama bin Laden, Biden was 100% against it. So they had to take, I mean, Obama made a huge gamble, but he made the right decision, quote unquote, the correct decision, in terms of, you know, the intelligence, he relied on his intelligence community. They said, we can't be 100% sure, but we think he's in this building. He's in this house there in Pakistan. And So he was getting the best advice he could get from all corners, you know, from everyone in the intelligence community that was sitting in front of him in the Oval Office. Biden was against it. He said, we shouldn't go in and do it.
Wow.
And Obama said, yeah, we're gonna do it. He decided we're going to take the chance and go after it and go in there. And I'm not sure what the final, you know, what it was like. Clapper never talked about that in his book about what made Barack Obama say, yep, go against his vice president. Again, another reason why I say Biden will make the wrong.
Maybe that's why Joe was Barack Obama's vice president. He gets so much wrong that you can use him as a barometer. Hey, would you do this, Joe? Oh, I definitely would. Then I won't.
You know, that's a brilliant deduction from that. You could be absolutely correct about that, you know, and that's why, you know, he looked to Biden sort of as his, you know, his measuring stick, maybe in a sense, and said, yeah, if he said no, then I should do it. You know, you could be absolutely right about that. And it was clearly a white knuckling experience. Because even though they had, you know, the incredible Admiral McRaven there, they fucked up. You know, a helicopter crashed during that raid, and they had to go to Plan B. These are not easy things to pull off. I mean, Obama took a huge chance. These are not easy. I mean, we think about Carter and the failed attempt to rescue the hostages in Iran. We think about those crashed the helicopters. If I'm remembering that correctly, I was very young back then, so I don't. But I remember that there was a failed attempt when President Carter tried to send in helicopters to try to rescue the hostages, and it failed. So you know, there was that in history. You know, Obama took a huge freaking chance. He took a huge gamble there, and then when that first helicopter crashed, McRaven said, let's go to Plan B, and then they succeeded. If we want to consider, you know, shooting Osama bin Laden on site and dumping his body in the ocean succeeding instead of bringing him to justice, you know. So I use that in quotes.
Yeah, but they knew they couldn't bring him back here, because if they'd done that, the Republicans would have had a hissy and sworn that we couldn't keep America safe and do justice.
It would have been, trial would have been in New York City, right?
Right, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, which is, you know, again, brings us forward to Benghazi, and then what happened in Iraq today. And the double standard going on there. So, anyway.
And I'm not real comfortable right now. Darlene, it's been a delightful conversation. Enjoy the Palmans.
I shall.
And I'm going to go over here and check in and see who's jingled in on the stress line.
Okay, cool.
All right. Stand by. Happy New Year. Hey, welcome to the program.
You too. Shorty.
Yeah, hey,
First
Shorty,
all,
what's up?
I want to say nothing much, but you're going to hear people repeat it, but they're going to sound just like this. Happy New Year! Okay, no, I got that up.
Okay. Everybody loves the stork. Happy New Year.
Yeah, the Foster Brooks. Wow, I was thinking everything that she was talking about. I was like, man, listen to us. Like, we're going to say one thing, and you guys keep talking. It's like, where was my pen and paper?
your kids.
Happy New Year. We tried three times. The kids were like, we're listening to the horn. And I was like, I know.
In London, no less.
I know, because my oldest say mom and my youngest say mama, you know, and they're like, mom. And I'm like, they're like, we can hear that part. We're getting an echo. And I'm like, oh, God. I'm gonna get cut off. So anyway, they're like, tell them I said, Happy New Year's, eh? So thank you. Where were we? Okay, about the Biden thing. You know what I was thinking about when you guys were talking? About how the history of Mr. wanting to divide Iraq into three, the Kurds, the Sunni, and Shia, and all this kind of stuff, and him being such a strong guy in the Senate, you know, it could go either way against the country. I think Obama said, okay, I'm picking him. Because I don't want him up in there screwing up. He's going to be my vice president. You know, not that he would be an enemy, you know.
Well, see, I'm jealous of you, Shorty, because your vote counts.
My vote counts.
You're in California, and California's on Super Tuesday, and it's going to make a big damn deal what California does on Super Tuesday.
You know what? I'm just a voter.
Yeah, but you're a voter whose vote matters.
Me wrong. Yeah, well, you know what? And if you guys in California and you're free from prison or whatever, I don't care who you are, you can go in the same day and vote. You know.
Yeah.
But just the people vote.
Since I'm in West Virginia, though, I don't get a primary vote until like the second week in May. And what I think doesn't matter, because it'll be all over but the shouting by May.
I mean, it's like that?
Yeah. Well, I mean, remember, the last primary you voted in California, you didn't get to vote till June.
Yeah, and then you had some crazy thing about when you went in to vote, it was considered, because everybody's places got chosen, switched. It was what we call an optional something voter, and they're not generally counted, or something like some provisional ballots. That's what they had. They had a gazillion provisional ballots, you know. What the heck did you guys do? This? I went right here to the corner at the school. I had to drive to go vote. And I'm like, what is wrong here? They're like, you're in the right place. I'm like, no, I'm not. And it's, oh, you need this ballot. I'm like, what? And so I was like, what's the provisional ballot? The ballot, I typed it and they said, may not be counted. I'm like, hey, but enough people voted, you know. But yeah, man, I'm just like, if people can just vote, you know, but you look at me funny and I'm in line, I'm feeling disappointed in a second, you know. I'm like, what are you staring at me for? Don't look at me, you know. But yeah, who has that thing? Oh, and about the, okay, you know how you guys are talking about Carter? I kind of feel like Obama got, you know, screwed, you know, well, and kind of screwed himself, you know, first with the Rahm Emanuel until, you know, he told his wife some shit, and then she, I don't know if you heard about how Michelle Obama was was emailing Valerie Jarrett, and Valerie Jarrett was taking Michelle Obama's email and sending it to Rahm Emanuel, and he finally got caught when he went down and was going against Obamacare. But they walked the hallways, because I used to be stationed at Pennsylvania Street, yada hoo yada, and so somehow, there's the places where you can walk like three different ways and you can hear things and can't hear things, but that one lane that you know who walks down, they can hear you coming and going. And for some reason, you know, you can hear a voice walking in a different direction. He must have said something to Lotus, and by the time they got to the end, you know, he did his stroll a little slower than Rahm Emanuel, and then was right behind him and said, hey, you know, paraphrasing, didn't you say you were going to be doing something in Chicago? And then, okay, he's at the press conference. And then he's going to be close to his family, whatever crap it was. Yeah. But then Valerie Jarrett came out and told, you know, that she took the names off of the emails. And it was a big thing. But yeah. And then, so it's like that. And then he picked all the wrong people and he wasn't listening to what was going on. And then everything he did, he still got screwed. Like what's his name did, like Carter did. I mean, they screwed him at the very end. You know, they held that money, you know, and the whole thing with getting the people out. But America was, I don't know if anybody remembers, America was pissed because Iran said, okay, we're letting all the women and the black people go. We're letting the black people go. Okay, and some women and kids. And the rest of them stayed. But then there was the other thing about the Snowden thing. Maybe, I don't know, I don't care anymore. Because it's like, come get me, I don't care. You know, the thing, you know, you can do things that people can see, but we don't let you know we see you because they won't get with you. You know, and so Obama and other people, you know, they were for, you know, like, the things that were going on with Snowden was like, okay, look, you're hurting Americans. You know, it wasn't like, okay, those other guys. Now, I'm giving you big secrets and all the other guys that got really busted, you know. And so it was like, what? You know, some of the things you have to tell them, you know, when they ask the question, like, well, how did this happen? How did this happen? Where's the camera? Where's the camera? You can see that he just didn't do that by himself. You know, Snowden, get away with all the information by himself. You know, someone along the way, you know, and yeah. Then the most dishonorable thing that you can do, and Obama didn't expect this, his body to be thrown over. He was very offended by that. He had to play that crap off. And
yeah, that was.
I would love to have seen his face on that one, because him being around people and people in his family that, you know, pray, you know, five times a day or however, you know, all speak, like my family's a rainbow, you know. And so it's like, seriously? Okay, so I'm going to come out.
Okay, well, that, and that was that was the that was the cultural conundrum they were in, because they dumped him at sea because they had to get him in the dirt in 24 hours in order to in the water.
Check it out. There's a way to do that. If I can get in a jet and zoom your ass somewhere because you did whatever hard somewhere, I can do it. You know, but they did that. I don't think they did that on their own. And I want to see what the writing was somewhere and who got their ass kicked on that one, because you do not do that. That's like taking a cross off someone's neck or whatever, you know what I'm saying? Telling a nun to go to hell, you know what I'm saying? You don't do that. He knows what's supposed to happen with it, of the faith. To me, that felt like, okay, come on, blow us up again, you know? After you kill him, you're going to dishonor him? You're asking for a terrorist attack. I mean, that had to hurt, because he knew that they should have dumped their bodies in. He just kind of like didn't say nothing, you know? And I don't know how it even looked like when he said that, but yeah, what was I thinking? What else was I thinking? Don't forget, you guys lost me. Oh, about these guys. Did you get my email about the PMU?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So all you guys, please remember this. The PMU, and I've got family over there fighting, and they're talking. These guys saved American lives. And they beat DICE, base, or whatever. And they wanted to go back in and destroy them again. But what they're not saying, if you can bring up the tapes and watch them again, those guys that were in uniform, those guys were working and switched over and said, no, we were our people and we're standing right here. And I dare you to be asking. I don't care. I will die. Okay? These guys saved our lives. Okay, you guys trained us. We're working with you. Oh, heck no. These guys stopped DICE and have been doing it consistently. And the young guys are only the ones struggling. I'm not, you know, calling home and saying, hey, what's going on? You guys say what's going on? They're not letting these guys hear all this news. Some of this is getting out, you know, and it's going to be a big stink. So I wrote on this Twitter page, you better stop lying, you know.
Yeah,
because, you know, it's our
and those are the people that we hit with the attack, right?
Pardon me, what?
That's who we hit, the PMU?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, listen, they said the house on American soil. The original transcript was some of those guys who lived in U.S. housing. You know, like base housing? Yeah, they kind of reworded it because they didn't want to say that, you know.
And when the news, of course, when I read the word, you know, contractor, an American defense contractor, that pretty much, if you're talking about Iraq, that means a mercenary, right?
Yeah.
One of those Blackwater Z, whatever we're calling them these days, types.
Oh, but these guys are now, okay, since we go over there and we train you, and you piss us off, you gave us the weapon and whatever, and I'm going to kick your ass. So now we're going to imitate you. We don't need your stinking Blackwater. We see what you did with the Fallujah. And even what's the name talked about it, Mad Dog Mattis, the other day on C-SPAN, about how that was screwed up. And what he said was, we acted like we did some shit. We weren't firing at nobody. You know, you guys saw here. I was like, what? He said that on top of it? We didn't really fire around. We took some stock footage and we cleaned up and got out of there. Because those contractors went in there like they were like John Wayne. And then the other thing about leadership and just transition so smoothly. So these kids are like kids now. Because these other guys are having to retire, and these guys are just, you know, out there. you know, and now they train their young kids, their Iraqis or whoever it is they're training. And they're like, hey, we're tired of this crap. Like, our kids here, they scared of you, cop, you know, whatever. I'm not gonna save my country. And for me to be standing there with you saying these guys are an embassy, you know, I gotta do it. But you're just like, we're training you. And you're like, shit, come on, shoot me, man. You know, dang, one of those guys saved their lives last week with the largest ever capture of people using night vision and all kind of things. You know, and they're going to say that Iran. Excuse me. No, you, Mr. President, got shamed. And when it comes out, you want to try to, you know, kill these guys first. No. We have people right. And all over, all you guys at the sound of our voice, you better write to these people and tell them about this stuff and bring up the real deal. Because this is serious. Because they're having they're calling every country to have exercises. Whoever wants to go, just come on and protect our area. Just come out and listen, exercise on how to stop ISIS and DICE. It's not about America at all. You know, not about any of that.
No, meanwhile our partners in the peace are the Saudis, and their dear leader Prince Bonesaw. Hey, Shorty, I got to get out of here. We're up at the top of the hour.
Okay.
You have yourself a have a happy New Year.
We'll put one hand on your left and your left hand on your right and say whatever you want to say. And when you get pulled over, you say Oshifer.
I'm not nearly as thick as you're drunk I am.
I love you.
Later.
Okay, me never, you too.
All right, see ya. Bye now.
Smooches. Bye.
Shorty, the one and only, calling from the greater L.A. area. And we are pretty much out of time, but I did see, I saw Steve in New York pop into the chat there for a minute. I just wanted to check in on him before we head out the door.
He left, Bob.
Oh, did he leave? Okay, yeah. Well... That concludes this little New Year's Eve on the front porch. Sparky, thanks for firing it up. I appreciate it, man.
You're welcome.
And enjoy the air fryer and the tri-tip.
I'm going to start kicking the tri-tip just as soon as I hang up here.
Hot diggity. All right, well, Happy New Year to you, Sparky. You take care.
All right.
Bye now. And so Happy New Year to all of you. I don't anticipate any reason why I should not be on the air tomorrow afternoon. I look forward to the first broadcast of 2020. Hope you'll join in. Thanks to all of you who keep the program on the air. Thanks very kindly to Cynthia for jumping in during the program. That helped considerably. Thank you, Cynthia. And thanks as well to all of you who keep the program on the air through your kind contributions, whether they be as a subscriber or a la carte. It's how we keep this little non-capitalist experiment in broadcasting going. Thank you very kindly indeed. Thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program, however you so choose to do. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky in the chat room and and on the front porch. Thank you very kindly to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiterosesociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. 20 years at the forefront of the struggle for environmental justice and human rights in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina. It's all for you. Later, y'all. Happy New Year. Should old acquaintance and all of that. Y'all stay safe tonight. Later.